Monday, October 4, 2021, Dakota County Board of Commissioners meeting at 3 o'clock, Dakota County Board of Equalization meeting at 3:30.
Pays no good benefits.
That's right.
Benefits.
Needs a court, the king in his court.
That's right.
All right, it's 3 o'clock, I'll call the meeting to order, and we'll start with our pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Janet Gill.
Here.
Scott Love.
Yes.
Robert Kiesey.
Here.
Larry Albanesh.
Here.
Troy Lonsby.
Here.
A current copy of the Open Meetings Act is posted on the west wall near the entrance of the County Board meeting room and is available for review by all citizens in attendance. First item on the agenda, item number one, is public comment. At this point, the Board of Commissioners will hear public comments about any item that's not on the agenda, and we can limit the time of the comment to 3 to 5 minutes. Is there anybody here for public comment on an item that's not on the agenda today? Okay. We will move down to the consent agenda at this point in time. On the consent agenda today, we have approval of the previous meeting minutes. I wasn't here, but I did read through them. And approval of the payroll claims. I did go through those just a little bit ago. They appear to be in order. The Sheriff's Department did put through their salary increases. And accounts payable. There was, I think in our packet here, we have one repayment a claim for Eastern Properties, a tax refund of about $800. So those are the consent agenda items for this time. No accounts payable this time?
So
next time. All right, Scott, a motion for the consent agenda.
A second.
Bob, a second. Any comments or questions about those items on the consent agenda? All right. Do a roll call on that.
Scott?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes. A new business and resolutions. We are honored to have John Cannon here today, NACO Executive Director, to talk to us about the American Rescue Plan, ARPA funds, eligible uses. So if you want to come forward, John, that'd be great. Thank you for coming all the way from Lincoln. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the invite to come up here and visit with you. It's honestly the best part of the job is being able to go to different parts of Nebraska and visit with folks and talk about all the stuff that's cooking. So as Janet mentioned, I'm John Cannon. I'm the executive director of your Nebraska Association of County Officials. And again, very, very pleased to be here visiting with y'all. I've been invited to come up here and visit about the ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act. That was a bill that was passed by Congress and signed into law by the president in March of this year. And that's it's a $1.9 trillion bill, and that's a lot of money, right? And just for perspective, among you who here thinks that $1.9 million is a lot of money, I hope it's all of you, and $1.9 trillion is a million times that. And so, to me, that's just mind-blowing sorts of numbers. And so, I know that when the bill comes due on that, I'm probably not going to be around, but my daughter is, my grandkids will be. And so, for me, probably the most important thing that we can do as public servants is to make sure that this money that has to be paid back at some point is spent as wisely as possible. And so, I just want to go through what the eligible uses are. One of the provisions in the American Rescue Plan Act is a clawback provision, so that if there is money that is spent on something that is not an eligible use, it can be clawed back by the federal government. And again, as I go around Nebraska, one of the things that I've heard very, very frequently is we send all of our money to Washington, we send all of our money to Lincoln, and we don't get a dime in return. And I hear it, and I recognize it, and I know that, by and large, there's a lot of truth to that. And so this one-time historic opportunity, we want to make sure that nothing's going to go back to Washington if we can all help it, because, again, this is something that you don't see happen very frequently. And before I really get into the eligible uses, I do want to put a plug in for the National Association of Counties. When the CARES Act came out last year, And that was money that was distributed directly to the state, all 50 state governments. And the governors had, they were supposed to distribute it to their state and local governments, and supposedly it was no strings attached. Well, our governor, and I'm not picking on our governor, just about every other governor said, oh, we're going to attach some strings. And so, as you'll recall, we had the Deloitte & Touche portal that any of the CARES Act funds that we were requesting reimbursement from, those had to be approved through that portal. That there were a lot of folks that were unhappy about that. They didn't like how it was being administered. They didn't like how long it took, et cetera, et cetera. And so the National Association of Counties really worked hand in glove with Congress to make sure that for the next round, and they knew there was going to be a next round, that those were going to be direct allocations to county governments. And so they were, by and large, they were successful. And again, this is something that you just don't see happen every day. And so, the National Association of Counties certainly deserves a lot of the credit. And I'm just going to point out that if you took Dakota County's almost $9 million allocation, your $450 annual fee would pay for 8,644 years of annual membership in the National Association of Counties. So
how many years was that?
8,644. Okay. And again, I'm not being paid by National NACO, but I am just pointing that out because they've been good partners for Nebraska NACO as well as all 3,089 counties across the country. So anyway, we'll go into what this distribution is supposed to be used for. And there's four primary eligible uses. I'll go through each of them. Please feel free to stop me, ask questions if you have any. My daughter tells me that my deep sonorous voice was great when she was a little girl and I was reading her bedtime stories to kind of lull her to sleep. Not so much now that she's a 25-year-old law student. So, she's like, just get to the point, Dad, and make it quick. So again, feel free to stop me and ask me questions. But anyway, as far as eligible uses are concerned, first one that they talk about is responding to the public health emergency and its negative economic impacts. Now, what does that mean? Responding to the public health emergency, if, for instance, your public health department came to you and said, we need help as far as distributing vaccines, we need help as far as distributing booster shots, we need help with the administration of how we're rolling out our response to the public health emergency, that would certainly be an eligible use. One of the things that Congress specifically said is that transfers of ARPA funds to nonprofits, special purpose units of government, those sorts of things for an eligible use is an eligible use. And so public health departments can come to you and they can make that request, and that would certainly be an eligible use. However, I am going to put this caveat out there, and I'm going to put caveats on just about everything I say. Anytime that you give a distribution to someone, whether it's to administer a block grant, whether it's to your public health department, whether it's to any other organization or entity, they don't have to account for it at the end of the day. You do. Okay. So I'm not sure who's been nominated to fill out your forms and do all the reporting to the federal government, but whoever that is, I'm sure they told you they had to provide fingerprints, middle name, firstborn child, all that good stuff. And the reason is because this is an historic distribution of money, and we want to make sure that $3.9 million doesn't make its way down to Belize or something like that. So anyway, when it
you
comes
said
to
they are admissible for nonprofits.
You can make a transfer to a nonprofit or a special purpose unit of government or some other entity as long as that transfer is for the eligible use. And so, public health department, they have not received a direct allocation. They're a special purpose unit of government. If you were to make a transfer to your public health department, and that would be a permitted transfer as long as they're using it for an eligible use. And so again, if the public health department, if they said, we're going to buy a giant disco ball and we're going to have the best party you've ever seen in South Sioux City, that money probably gets clawed back. And again, because of the fact that you're on the hook and not the public health department, it is very, very wise to make sure that any entity that you're providing money to, you're requiring that they account for every penny, because again, you're on the hook for it. So that's my example of an eligible use for responding to the public health the public health emergency. But also, there's the second part of that is and its negative economic impacts. So what does that mean exactly? I can probably tell you that those of you who are from South Sioux City, there's probably a little bit of an impact in tourism. I suspect that the hotel industry had suffered some setbacks. Probably anything that's related to travel. You saw travel went down in the United States about 10-15% last year. Those would be affected industries. So if the board wanted to, for instance, administer a block grant for any affected industry, and you can make up the rules. You can say, any industry that was in these affected industries that suffered a revenue loss of more than X percent. I'm going to turn off my phone. Pardon me. I'm sorry. Any industry that suffered a loss of a revenue of more than X percent compared to their five-year rolling average, for instance. And again, it can be one-year rolling average, it can be a three-year, whatever you want it to be, it can be whatever percentage you want it to be. But in the industry that suffered that revenue loss, you can apply for a block grant, and you can administer that block grant however you want. It can be on a proportional basis, it can be on a, you know, straight where we have 10 applicants for $500,000 of the block grant, everyone gets 50 grand. Whatever, however you want that to look like. But you can administer a block grant for affected industries. You can also administer grants for affected classes of citizens. For instance, I'll use my own experience living in Lancaster County. I can tell you that all my favorite restaurants, they did not have anything to worry about as far as my patronage. I ordered, got curbside service, or I had Grubhub or someone deliver food to me. So as far as actually dining out and whatnot, I was able to not be affected. However, I can tell you that a lot of those restaurants, their wait staff didn't need them. And so there's a lot of folks that were waiting tables and hustling to make a living that were laid off. And if you've got any affected classes of people that suffered an economic loss, you could set up a block grant. You could have direct payments, for instance, however you want that to look like. You could also have, for instance, meatpacking. There were a lot of layoffs in the meatpacking industry. You could set up something like that as well to administer a block grant or direct payments to anyone that was an affected class of citizenry. So that's addressing the negative economic impacts. So that's the first part, which is responding to public health emergency and its negative economic impacts. The second one I'm going to kind of breeze over, but I'm going to mention it just a little bit just to describe a couple of things. The second one is any reduction in revenue providing government services to the extent that there had been a reduction in revenue. Now, most counties in Nebraska rely primarily on the property tax, and I think your treasurer and your assessor would tell you that receipts were pretty much the same as they always have been because people have to pay their property taxes. Oh, by the way, very popular issue, I'm sure, when you're campaigning. Everyone said that they're very concerned about property taxes, and I'll address that a little bit after I talk about ARPA. But in Nebraska, we have it good or bad, depending on how you want to look at it. County governments are funded primarily by the property tax. We get a little piece from inheritance tax, and I'm sure you guys have a pretty healthy inheritance tax fund. I think the last time we talked about it, you did. And sadly, people didn't stop dying. We have a little bit from the highway allocation fund that comes to us. We have a little bit of lodging tax that comes to county governments. And so it's possible that you would have had a small reduction in revenue from those sources. And if that's the case, and again, whoever has volunteered to fill out all the forms for the federal government, they've already done that calculation, that preliminary calculation as to whether or not there was a revenue loss. My suspicion is that, in all likelihood, Dakota County did not have much of a revenue loss.
A little bit.
Or was there a little bit?
Yep.
Okay, and primarily from lodging tax and highway allocation,
yeah.
Probably?
Yeah, we had $100,000 down in lodging tax.
Okay,
yeah.
And so that reduction in revenue, that can be supplemented by ARPA funds, and so to the extent that you had a loss of general fund revenue, you can supplement that through ARPA. So that's one. The reason I bring it up, again, most counties don't have that. I would say, a rough estimate, 80 counties in Nebraska, it's going to be zero for them as far as reduction in revenue. The other reason I mentioned it is because there are a lot of other states in the country, and you say, well, why would this apply to us? There's a lot of other states in the country that they have other revenue sources. My counterpart in New York State, he was telling me that in New York State, the counties have roughly a third of the revenue stream comes from income taxes, which blows my mind. A third of it comes from sales taxes, and about a third of it comes from property taxes. So, they have a slightly different structure than we do. And so that revenue replacement, because they had such a hit on the sales tax side, that revenue replacement was used in primarily eastern states, counties in eastern states. So I do want to mention that. I'm sure you hear a lot about, again, how we rely on property taxes. There are other systems out there. And so when we talk about legislation or the future, I just want to make sure that I've kind of planted that seed for other possibilities of raising revenues to make sure that we're able to provide the essential services that the counties do. Any questions so far? Okay.
If we do show a negative reduction in revenue, how do we apply that?
I will tell you to call Candace Meredith because
okay.
She knows the answer to
okay.
that. My understanding is it's a transfer into your general fund, but I
okay.
don't quote me on that,
okay.
even though the cameras are rolling. So,
okay.
Anyway, the third eligible use is for necessary investments in water, sewer, or broadband infrastructure. Now, what is that? When this first came out, I had a lot of calls from a lot of highway superintendents that said, what about box culverts? And that was a very popular question. And the answer for that is maybe. And I'll describe it as there are resources out there that have been put together by Nebraska NACO, Nebraska Association of County Officials, by the National Association of Counties, and by the U.S. Treasury. You can get to all of them pretty much through our website if you so desire, or the National Association's website. And they kind of go through, you know, what, you know, they give a little bit more definition to what these eligible uses are. And I came up here because I'm not going to ask you to read through all that stuff. It'll put you right to sleep. But what I can say is that for things like box culverts or water projects or sewer projects, the general rule of thumb is if it's something that would qualify as an expense through the Environmental Protection Agency's Clean Water State Revolving Fund or Drinking Water State Revolving Fund, then the Treasury Department has said that automatically meets that criteria to be an eligible use for spending of funds. And so I've looked at the EPA's website. I've, you know, kind of looked, okay, well, what sorts of projects qualify under their Clean Water and Drinking Water State Revolving Funds? And one of the things they have on there is that culverts may be eligible. And I said, oh, well, that's the best news of all. So I'll give you a very definite maybe as far as culverts, because I know that's a fairly popular question. But anyway, that's the general rules for water and sewer. And then the other piece of that is broadband. And one thing I do want to mention is, as far as kind of getting on my soapbox about rural broadband, you know, that's certainly one of the things that we found through the pandemic was crucial for a lot of our citizens. And I can tell you that in Garfield County, I was visiting with the Garfield County Commissioner, and one of the things that she told me was they actually had more revenue because there are a lot of folks from Lincoln and Omaha that said, well, if I can work remotely, I'm going to go up to my lake house at Calamus Reservoir, and I'm going to work from there. And so their sales taxes, or lodging tax receipts were up there. The little bit of highway allocation they got was up. And there's a little portion of sales tax that somehow got funneled to them through, you know, through the state, but that they were able to receive as well. And they did very, very well. But that's one of the reasons they have that is because up there around Calamus, they have reliable broadband. This year, for instance, the state legislature passed LB 388, which is for rural broadband specifically. It's still on my soapbox. I guess one of the things that I would say is that the ability to have reliable broadband to work from anywhere makes a place like rural Nebraska, the more rural parts of Nebraska, very, very attractive for people that live in cities. We learned in the pandemic, stay the heck away from other people, socially distance. Out in western Nebraska, that's a day that ends in the letter Y. You know, more toward this part of the state, you know, socially distancing is a little bit harder unless you want to get back out into the country or to the more rural parts of your county. And so, to the extent that we can provide reliable broadband for our constituents, that's certainly a great way of getting there. And again, that LB 388 I was talking about, that's specifically for rural broadband. That is put $20 million this year toward seed money for rural broadband projects and $20 million next year for rural broadband as well. So there are opportunities to partner with the state. For what it's worth, I'll be testifying tomorrow on LR 178, which is, you know, how the state is supposed to be sending its ARPA funds. The governor has already said he's going to let the legislature figure out how to use it, and I'm going to go down there and I'm going to talk about rural broadband, because my dispensation as the executive director of NACO is I need to worry about 93 counties. You know, Lincoln and Omaha, they're going to be fine. They've got broadband, you know, like you wouldn't believe. However, for 80 counties in the state, broadband's a real issue, and so that's one of the things I'm going to really be harping on when I go testify in front of the legislature tomorrow. So I'll stop harping on that with you all. So and then the last part I want to mention, and this is a little bit of a sensitive subject, and so I'm going to put a whole bunch of caveats on here. The fourth eligible use is premium pay for eligible employees. And that premium pay is up to $25,000 per employee, or depending on how you want to measure it or compensate someone, up to $13 an hour for time that they were spent doing eligible employee things. And so the question is, what's an eligible employee? And the general rule is any person that had face-to-face contact with the public or was handling materials that were handled by the public would be an eligible employee. When you go through the U.S. Treasury Department's final rule or their interim final rule, they make it very, very clear that government employees, so employees of state and local units of government, would be eligible employees. And I'll go back to, you know, if you recall, one of the strings that the governor had put on CARES Act funds is that the courthouse has to be open, right? I think you all remember that. And so, because one of the things I noticed is that when, you know, the pandemic really struck, we had a little map that showed courthouse closures, and you saw all these closures go all the way across the state, and then the governor said, oh, by the way, if you want money from CARES Act, you need to open the courthouse, and you saw all these courthouses reopen. almost as if it was magic. And but anyway, by virtue of that, I would say, well, that means that any person that was in the courthouse during that period we had to be open, they're an eligible employee because they had face-to-face contact with the public. And again, the Treasury rules clarify that because of that sort of thing, courthouse employees would be eligible. However, if anyone telecommuted and or telecommuted primarily for their job, they would not be eligible. So that's one thing I want to caution you about. The other caution is when you start drawing those lines, you know, who was telecommuting, who was not. You know, the question would be, what about dispatchers in the sheriff's office? Were they face-to-face contact with the public? There are a lot of counties they were, some counties they weren't. When you start drawing those lines, people's feelings are going to get hurt in the courthouse. You probably know that a lot better than I do. So that's just the nature of the beast. The other caveat I want to put out there, and again, these are all elected officials I'm addressing right now, is that the Nebraska Constitution, so separate from ARPA, but the Nebraska Constitution says that when you adopt a salary and you set the salaries for all the elected officials for the upcoming term, that salary can't go up and it can't go down. And this would be a violation of that. That would be a violation of the Nebraska Constitution. So everyone that's an employee in the courthouse, they're jumping for joy. However, if you're an elected official, not so much. So that becomes a little bit problematic, as you can imagine. And frankly, someone in Kim's office, you know, if you said we're going to give $10,000 to, you know, every employee that's not an elected official, you know, you could have someone that's making more than the boss. That becomes a little bit of a problem as well. So my caution to you is to be very, very intentional and very, very transparent as to how you're going to, if you go down that road, how you want to divvy up those funds. I can say there's one county in western Nebraska, it's Morrill County, not to name names, but they've already spent their first half tranche, and it was all, you know, a bonus for everybody in the courthouse, every employee in the courthouse, which kind of
how much money did they end up getting?
Not nearly as much as you did. I think they got $1.6 million, so they had $800,000 that all went to their, no, I'm sorry, a different county. They got $950,000, I believe, so that first half was $475,000, and then all went to courthouse employees, which, again, they're all dancing in the streets. You know, I'm not sure I would have done that, but that's their business. They know who's, you know, in the courthouse, who deserves, you know, those sorts of funds. And
what county was that?
Well, Morrill.
Morrill.
Yeah, and again, I know the chairman of the board out there, his name's Jeff Metz. Great guy. He talks a good game, but he cares very, very deeply about the employees in the courthouse. And so anyway, I'm not going to fault him for wanting to reward the people that, you know, they were on the front line during the pandemic. They were dealing with the public, trying to help them get through a pretty stressful situation, and it's already stressful when people come to the courthouse. I mean, just the nature of it, you know, coming to the seat of government. And so, you know, having to deal with the public and the, you know, everybody else in the midst of a global pandemic, he said, well, our folks deserve to be rewarded. So I'm not going to gainsay him for that. I'm just going to note it. They're the only county that has spent their whole first half allotment so far. So
dancing in the streets.
So what happens if an employee was employed at that time and then left and went elsewhere for other employment? Then what happened?
So what they did was they prorated it. So if you were, and they set up the period. It was, you know, March 1st through whatever the date was. And if you were employed from March 1st to August 1st, they gave you a prorated amount. So, again, kind of took me by surprise, but it's their money. They can do what they want. And that's the other thing I do want to mention. You know, there's a lot of questions as to, well, how can we spend this money? And, you know, do we have to get permission beforehand? This money is sitting in your bank account, right? Technically, if you wanted to, you could go buy the aforementioned disco ball yourselves and throw the biggest party that South Sioux City's ever seen, knowing that it's going to get clawed back by the federal government in all likelihood. But it is your money. It's sitting in your account. You know, you can do with it what you will. So this is really one of those situations where at the end of the day, we're asking forgiveness rather than permission. Now, I would tell you that it's a really good idea to make sure that you don't have to ask forgiveness, right? I've got some ideas or some thoughts as to, you know, how this is going to end up shaking out at the end, but I'll leave that for a more personal conversation. The other thing I will say is that there are two dates that you need to be aware of. One of them is December 31st of 2024. The other one is December 31st of 2026. The 2024 date, that is the date that your funds have to be obligated. You have to know exactly what you're spending your ARPA funds on by end of year 2024. You have to have spent all that money by the end of year 2026. So I guess my message for you is we have time. You have the opportunity to very thoughtfully figure out how you're going to spend these funds. My recommendation is to solicit as much input from the public as you can, whether it's through a board meeting, whether it's through town halls, you know, whatever. I mean, just visiting with your constituents yourselves, you know, whatever mechanism you want. I would solicit as much input from the public as possible to say, what do you want these funds spent on? And you'll make the right decision for your constituents.
Have you heard any kind of off-the-wall ideas that people have come up with that are gray area?
Yeah, actually,
A good idea that possibly?
Yeah, actually, we had a really good one from Valley County. I was up there, gosh, it seems like about a month ago, I think. And the question was, well, you know, what about a child care center? You know, because one of the, responding to the pandemic, you know, responding to the public health emergency, we're told we have to social distance. You know, and we can show that, you know, once kids were sent home, they had to do remote learning. There was about 30% of their workforce dropped out in the ward, right? Because they didn't have, they couldn't send their kids off somewhere because the schools are shut down, right? And so 30% of their workforce drops out, and all of a sudden that just kills the economy in Ord. Well, you know, and so in responding to the negative economic impact, they said, well, if we put this money toward building a child care center and staffing it appropriately, you know, that's responding to it. And I thought, well, that's really a stretch. And so, you know, we brought it up with the National Association. They said, we've heard this one before. They put it in front of Treasury, and I was sitting in a webinar, and they asked a question of some guy from the Treasury Department. He says, yeah, I think that would qualify. And I thought, could it knock me over with a feather? So someone a little bit off the wall, but, you know, when you think about it, though, and you get right down to it, if you can show, I mean, if you can show your work with all this stuff, you really need to document as much as possible. But if you can show your work and say, you know, X percent of the workforce dropped out, it had this sort of effect on the local economy, and so this is going to address that negative economic impact, I think it's fair game.
Do different states have different guidelines, or counties? Are we all counties
all
in Iowa the same as they are in Nebraska?
All 3,089 counties funds? Across the country.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but again, show your work. I mean, that's the best thing you can do is, and you got your attorney here, and she will tell you that you document the heck out of every last thing. So the accountants love it. And that's the last thing I do want to mention, is that the NACO board, our NACO board, when we were talking about this at first, one of the things they asked us to look into was, you know, is there a company that we could contract with in order to answer these questions, some of the more off-the-wall questions, or to help administer a block grant, or to just assist in general with county governments. And so we knew that Deloitte & Touche is who the governor had used last year for the CARES Act portal, and we visited with them. Certainly the governor recommended them. They're still going with them. Douglas County uses them, and, you know, large multinational corporation. I mean, for what it's worth, I was in Reykjavik, Iceland. My wife paid for the trip. Don't want you to, you know, think we're paying the executive director at NACO too much. And every day that we drove into town, we passed by a Deloitte tower, and I thought, these guys are everywhere. So nothing wrong with Deloitte. They're a great corporation. They really are. We also had the opportunity to visit with a local company called Lutz & Company. They're headquartered in Omaha. They have offices in Lincoln, Hastings, and Grand Island. And we interviewed both companies. And one of the questions that I asked was, okay, you know, Lincoln and Omaha, I get it. You guys are going to be there. Because Deloitte has an office in Omaha, and, you know, obviously Lutz has offices in four cities in Nebraska. I said, but how likely is it that you're going to go to Harrison, or you're going to go to Broken Bow, or you're going to go to Dakota City? And, you know, when Deloitte answered it, they said, well, we're going to leverage our technology and try and make these face-to-face meetings as virtual as we can, you know, et cetera. And Lutz said, that's what we do. You know, we'll send, if we need to get to the western part of the state, we'll send someone from Hastings. You know, if anyone in the northeast part of the state, we'll send someone from Omaha or Lincoln. And they said, you know, that seals it for me. So we contracted with Lutz. You know, and so any county can sign with Lutz and come up with an agreement with them to have services. And oh, by the way, those services can be paid for through ARPA funds. So that's one of the nice things. And then there are a couple things I did want to mention about the National Association. When the Treasury Department first issued its first interim final rule, which was, you know, back in April or so, one of the things they were very, very specific about is they said, any interest that you earn on any of your ARPA funds that are sitting in your bank accounts, that has to be used for an eligible use, or else you have to return it back to the U.S. Treasury. And the National Association lobbied them, and they said, yeah, okay, go ahead and keep all that interest. And so any interest you earn off of ARPA funds is something that you can keep. And then the other one was, you know, how do we pay for assistance, because this is a fairly complicated act that we're working with. And, you know, originally U.S. Treasury had said, well, no, you have to pay for it out of your own general fund. And then they relented and said, yeah, you can pay for it out of ARPA. So that's...
What was that? What can be paid with ARPA?
Any consultation, any consulting agreements?
The LUTs. Okay.
Yeah, LUTs. I mean, and frankly, just because, again, I'm in favor of LUTs. I think they're a good company. They're a good Nebraska company. Keeping Nebraska dollars in Nebraska, I think, is a good deal. Deloitte is a great, they're a great multinational corporation. Your CPAs, I mean, I'm sure you've got CPAs in Dakota City or in South Sioux City that are, you know, that probably serve you well. I don't want to discourage you from looking elsewhere, but by the same token, we think LUTs is a pretty good deal for Nebraska. So that's why we said.
They're happy with per hour, would they like to charge?
I'm sorry?
Their cost per hour.
Yeah.
And what they charge is.
It's
pretty phenomenal.
It's not chicken feed, that's for sure.
No.
Is there somebody, so other than yourself, who's is Canvas a go-to person?
Yes.
From NACO?
Yep. So is Beth Farrell and Elaine Menzel. I think between the four of us, we probably fielded a couple hundred questions so far.
Okay. And are those your website, the NACO website, is that updated weekly, I'm assuming, or if there's any changes to...
We update it when we can. You know, really there hasn't been a lot of movement as far as a lot of the either the interim final rule or any of the things coming from the federal government or from the National Association. One thing I will say is the National Association, they have webinars all the time. I mean, probably three or four times a week on different aspects of ARPA. And so certainly... I mean, it's one of those things that kind of creates information overload. I can tell you, I haven't listened to a webinar in probably 3 weeks because I've been on the road for the last 3 weeks. But a lot of really great information is there.
And those are on your website, NACO's website, to get to the national ones?
Yeah, we have links to national NACO. Okay. Oh, by the way, I mean, you know, ours is NACONE.org, theirs is NACO.org. So it's actually two less keystrokes just to go directly to their website. But yeah, we have links there as well.
How much money is the county receiving?
Pardon?
How much money is the county giving?
$3,889,816. Mm-hmm. Or that might be $899. I think it's $3,899. I can't read my handwriting sometimes. I apologize.
The 12th, you had two dates, 12/31/24. We have to obligate funds by 12/31/26. Is that the date?
Spend them.
Have to be spent. Okay,
yep.
By that date.
Just to repeat, the interest that we're earning, we can keep.
You can keep it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had heard earlier that it had to be.
Yeah, that was one of those things that the originally Treasury said, okay. Why would you be able to keep your interest on the money that you're earning in your bank account? And National Association and a lot of other people said, why wouldn't we? And they said, okay, very well, go ahead and keep it.
Okay.
There's one thing that I'm don't quite understand is the box culvert.
Mm-hmm.
Is a means of getting water from one side of the road to the other.
Right.
So you still drive on
right.
The road, not drive in the creek. A bridge does the same thing.
Yep.
And a corrugated metal steel collar does the same thing.
That's true.
So is a bridge eligible?
I will refer you back to the Treasury Department's interim final rule, the FAQ to the interim final rule, where they say if it qualifies as an expense under the Environmental Protection Agency's Clean Water State Revolving Fund or Drinking Water State Revolving Fund, then yes. And that's as good an answer as I can give you. I would love to say that bridges will qualify. I wasn't on a webinar where someone asked the very question and they said, no, bridges are not going to qualify. Now, they probably hadn't had the opportunity to really kind of plumb the depths of that, but that was the answer that I heard from Treasury during a webinar. So take that with a huge grain of salt and for what it's worth. But I think right now the indications that we've received from Treasury is that bridges will not qualify.
That'd be too easy, right?
It would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And we can't do that.
Yeah. What about ventilation systems, you know, with air exchange and things like that?
Yeah, I think they would qualify. If it's something that's it's primarily designed to improve your air quality or your air flow, because of the fact that this is an airborne virus that we're dealing with, I think it would qualify. One of the other questions, to go back to what Bob was asking, there was a question that was asked about expanding the jail, because you know certainly your inmates are going to have a hard time socially distancing, and that was actually discussed with the Treasury Department, and they said, yeah, expanding your jails, if any congregational facility, that an expansion of that to meet social distancing guidelines would be an eligible use of funds.
I'm sure once we get our committee set up, whoever that may be, several people, on how we're going to try to figure out what the needs and the wants are for this money, I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions for you folks.
We're happy to answer them. Yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, Lutz has been a great partner. They're a good Nebraska company. They do charge a little bit. I work for you. Candace Meredith works directly for you. Beth Farrell, Lane Menzel, we all work for you. And so if you call us with a question, we're not going to charge you.
I mean, I wasn't throwing them under the bus that they're expensive. But
oh,
they,
sure.
I mean, it just seems expensive. But.
I had reached out and got an engagement letter from
yep.
them
yep.
That they have their fees on.
It could be worth their weight in gold.
Mm-hmm. They've done some good work.
They will be the person working.
Yeah. Exactly.
Trying to work the system and
yeah.
say
yep.
to develop all the.
Yeah. One thing I can say is that there have been a couple of things. There have been a couple of counties that have called. They said, you know, we've got a laundry list. You know what? And just as a for instance, here are the positions that we have for county employees, and would they be considered to have had, you know, direct face to face contact with the public? And you know, and the ask of us was, can you reach out to Lutz and have NACO pay for it? Because this is an answer that applies to all 93 counties. We did our own research and we said, yeah, you know, the answer is yes for all these folks. And then we ran it by Lutz, and they didn't charge us. They said, yeah, we agree with your conclusion. So, you know, again, that's something that we can do at NACO. There have been a couple of questions that we've sent over to Lutz where we've said this is an all 93 county sort of question, and so they've, you know, we've been upfront with them about that. And they said, yeah, okay, we're just going to charge NACO, and you guys can disseminate that as you will.
Great.
I don't know how often they're going to do that, though, because I think they have an interest in, you know,
mm-hmm.
making a little bit of money as well.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. Good info.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So, good
sure.
info.
Well, and since I'm here, do you have any other questions for me as far as what's going on with NACO, what's going on with legislation?
What's going on with Larry Dix nowadays?
Oh man, now that guy, I'll tell you what. So, you know, when he retired, his official retirement date was January 31st, right? And so February 1 dawns, and I roll into the office, and Larry traditionally would get to the office at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'd get there a little bit afterwards. So I'd get into the office, and I'd look out the window, and Larry's truck is parked in the drive, and I said, okay, Larry's here. And that, for about the first month, for all of February, you know, I'd get to the office, and Larry would get there before me. But I did notice at the end of February that, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon he might take off. Yeah, maybe afternoon, who knows. And then, you know, March hit, and, well, I'm gonna come in late, you know, these two mornings during the week. Yeah, that's cool. That's totally fine. This is what retirement's about. And then I noticed as we got through the summer, all of a sudden it's like, I'll see you next week. Well, Larry, it's Monday, you know, and so.
So it took him a little bit to weed himself away.
Yeah, he's on the off ramp. Let's put it that way. But he's
a class act. I like that guy. I met him back in 2010 or 11. Mm-hmm. He was very full of knowledge. He's a great guy.
He's you know, I've got to say the worst thing about this job. This is the greatest job in the world. The worst thing is I have to come after Larry Dix.
That's right. You got to fulfill kind of some shoes. That, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like,
you
know, come
well,
after.
I think you're doing fine. I think you'd be good.
Doing a good
you're
doing job,
well.
John.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions for John today? Thank you so much for coming, and it really was very helpful. And we do have this engagement letter that's on the next item on the agenda, I believe, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'll be sticking around for a little while. So if you have any questions as we go, let me know.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you.
Yep.
All right.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks, John. Oh, item B, I guess there's one item between there. B, board to designate an ARPA committee regarding eligible uses for the American Rescue Plan Act ARPA funds. So we have, I think we have a potential list in here. No?
I think that's right there. You're looking at it.
Okay, I'm looking at it right
that's
here.
That's all I had was.
Okay.
So we reached out to every community, is that correct, Joe?
We did.
And.
So we didn't get anybody from Jackson or Emerson then, apparently.
We did not.
Hmm.
I don't think we heard back.
So they must not want to be a part of it, I take it? What's the Hubbard lease supposed to be? 19,000. What does that mean? Because I know you reached
the
out and
the
asked
villages
the people.
Reached, the villages got money also.
Okay. I knew
just
that was
so that you're aware of that.
Okay.
Hubbard got 19,000, Jackson got 17,964. I'm not sure. Homer, village clerk, was out of the office for about a month or two, so.
I would think if Hubbard got 19, Homer had to get.
Homer has reached out with a sewer project that they were going to apply all their money for and needed a little more type question. Deanna Hagberg we put on because she has a lot of fire department representation from the fire departments, and they had come forward with some requests for some equipment. And then Don's our treasurer, and I'm putting Cherie on there because I don't plan to file to run again, and this is going to be just way past my, I'll be in retirement, so we need somebody. I don't want to start and then walk away, so.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a sad day, Joan. I get it, though.
Yeah. So we've got, on this committee so far, we've Cherie, Dawn, and Deanna from inside the courthouse, and then commissioners, Scott and Bob, you guys volunteered to, okay.
We did, unless somebody else wants okay. to jump on. I don't have to be.
And then.
I mean, I'm willing to.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, yeah. Homer, Paul Bogus and Cody Snyder, Hubbard, Lisa Bosquet. I was actually at the Jackson Town meeting this last month, and I thought they were going to send somebody, but they didn't respond, huh?
I mean, I would leave it open.
Okay.
I guess.
And Emerson, would they be? I don't even know where the line is in Emerson, to be honest with you. For Dakota County.
Well, I think whoever's going to be on this when we do have our first meeting or etc., they need to be there from
yeah,
the very get-go.
Right, to get the
info. From the word go. So mm-hmm. You don't want to start and have several meetings and all of a sudden they start showing up and yeah,
right.
that's not
right.
going to work.
Right. Okay, so board to designate an ARPA committee regarding the eligible uses of the rescue plan. So we've got eight people, I guess.
What's Cody's name?
What?
Snyder.
From Homer? Yeah, Cody Snyder from Homer. He's on the town board.
Do you want two from Homer, or do you want just one, and then reach out to Emerson and Jackson also, and maybe the chamber? I talked to Simco also.
Well, I'm 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8.
Who's going to be in charge of setting up meetings and et cetera on this deal? I guess I'm trying to.
Let's see.
Cherie? I would think it would be Cherie.
I'll probably just have her set it out from here.
Well, limit it to 10 or whatever. And see if you can get a few more people, 10, 12, I don't know. I guess it's up to you. I'm not in the committee, but you two, whatever you.
Well, and like John said, we have time. So, mm-hmm. As we develop some sort of ideas, I mean, we'll have to get together eventually. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be tomorrow, but it probably before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. At least initially. So, unless you want to do it before that, Scott.
They don't make no difference. I don't think we really need to. I mean, we're in October already, so maybe we'll just get with Cherie and whatever. See if she will
set a date
and send out some emails and see if Jackson and Emerson do want to be involved and just let them know, hey, this is the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either you're in or you're out.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
So you'll send invitations to these people and mm-hmm. and then establish the committee when they show?
Mm-hmm.
So do we need a motion to accept the people that are on here, or just any sort of a motion to move forward with this committee? Or do we have this list and we're good with that?
Well, the board doesn't designate it. I guess we probably should make a motion to the following list. Is that correct, John? Does that sound right?
I think you just designate.
Do you
okay.
People's names? Do you think we need to designate people's names or just a number?
Well, normally you do names.
Do names?
Because if you're not ready to do it, then I'd wait.
Right.
So if you designate and you add other people later, then it's kind of, then you have to technically add them on?
Yeah.
Well, maybe after your first meeting? Yeah.
Next meeting, just reach out to these people the next, within the next 2 weeks.
See if maybe they'll respond.
That's fair enough.
Give them a deadline and say, okay.
All right, that's easy.
We'll put it on the next agenda and reach out in the meantime.
Okay, but yeah, this is a good list to start with for sure, definitely.
Okay.
Good folks are interested, that's great, all right. And it was nice, too bad we didn't have that designated ahead of time, they could listen to John, you know. But that's on tape, we got it on tape, so we can play that back. All right, so we will next time hopefully be able to firm up our committee for ARPA funds. Item C on the list, John talked about the Lutz agreement. That is in our packet here, with the type of work that they'll do, the cost per hour. Nowhere in here does it indicate that there's a minimum amount that we have to pay. I mean, I suppose if we, I don't think we have to use them so many hours a year or so many hours a month or anything like that. Did you say anything to that effect?
No, just the monthly.
Yeah. So if we use them, we'll get a bill? If we don't, okay. We won't.
So we do have a letter of engagement, is that correct, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll make a motion for the chair to sign an engagement letter for Lutz and Company, a CPA firm, to provide assistance in the local plan act, the ARPA.
Perfect. Thanks, Scott. I can second that. Any discussion on the Lutz agreement?
What's the cost per hour?
There's a variety.
Ranges from
140.
Depends on what they do.
Yeah, 145 to 3 something, I think, per hour.
What they do and who does it.
Yep.
Yeah.
What level
it
of partner.
It all depends who's working on.
Mm-hmm. What type of project it happens to relate to.
Yeah.
All right. Any other discussions or questions? All right, let's take a roll on that.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Okay. Item number D on the agenda. Pat Engel, Dakota City, has filed a petition to close or vacate a road with the county clerk requesting vacation of a road described as platted as an alley in Block 3, Crystal Beach, between lots 1 to 9 on the north and lots 10 to 18 on the south, accepting a portion of Eagle Drive in Dakota City, Nebraska, Section 6, Township 28N, Range 9E.
So, yeah, we have the petition. Everybody signed it, so.
Yeah. And then the board, I think we did something very similar to this last year.
We closed West Street and First Street on the east and west sides of Block 3, and now he wants to close the alley, and I did reach out to Nirma to make sure we could close an alley, and he said even though it all states road, that alley, we can also close an alley.
You can close an alley.
It's platted in one spot as an alley on our GIS website. It says road. I guess the thing we want to do, or that the highway superintendent do, is to make sure they look for easements or right-of-ways or utilities upon there. He didn't think they were, but.
So that would basically be our next item, item number E.
Right.
We will ask our highway, direct our highway superintendent to do a study and then come back to us with a recommendation regarding the abandonment or vacation of that.
So once we do a study, once if we approve this resolution, we do a study and then we'll have a public hearing, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
We have to advertise for 3 weeks.
Right, right,
it's
right.
It's a little
right.
bit of a wait period.
Right, right. And then have a public hearing and, yeah.
And then there's a map on the back of that as well, so you can kind of go out and check it out yourself if you want to. So watch this out. There's some stuff. I backed into something after last year when we did this.
Makes really no
sense. Made a dent on my. Okay, so let's see. I'll make a motion to have. Let's see. Do we need a motion on the first one?
No.
No. D E. I'll make a motion to have the highway superintendent study the make a motion to approve resolution 21C-044. to have the highway superintendent study that public road alley in Block 3 in Crystal Beach, Section 6, Township 28, and Range 9E. Janet, Scott, any other discussions or questions regarding that request or petition and request? Vote on that.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
All right, so that resolution passed. And Jolene, you, do you have this information?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you. Miscellaneous and old business. Item number A, board to approve or not approve pre-construction services agreement between Dakota County and the White's Company from La Vista, Nebraska for the Phase 2 jail construction project. Do we have anybody here to visit about that? Or I know I missed the last meeting when it was discussed.
Good afternoon, board.
Good afternoon.
I'm Brian Mullendorf with the White's Company. We were here in the prior month, and the sheriff has asked us to come back this month, and you had a full board. I know there were a number of questions the last time. I'm certainly here to answer any of those for you.
Yeah, and Steve Davis, good to see you guys again. Obviously, I want to let you know we've been working hard on the project. We got our submittals in state jail standards, working on the plans. We've been, had engineers that were on site today that were looking at existing systems to make sure everything we're doing is going to work with what we have. And since I was on, going to be on site, I offered to the sheriff, said, it would be helpful to be here to answer questions about, you know, our contract and how that works with a construction manager with White's. Be glad to answer any of those questions.
So you're the architect, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I didn't meet you the last time around. I was gone, but I did see the emails with all the
good
questions.
Job.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Because I tried to get all of us in what yep. questions, so maybe we can help yep. answer some of those.
And yep. Ron Hines wanted to be in on the conversation, too. So if we can just put him on.
Who's Ron?
Ron is our project manager from okay. our office. So he's the one that handles contracts and all that kind of stuff, too. So he couldn't make it today, but he didn't need to be on site doing measurements.
I probably do know Ron. Do I? No, I don't think I know.
He was, no, I hadn't met him before. I remember Steve, Ron. Steve?
Is there a completed set of plans at the moment?
For the new project?
Yeah.
Not for the new project. There was a completed set that was done 16 years ago. But there's been changes that have been code since then that require us to review those. We've also made some, we're incorporating some changes in the new plan to address some of the problems in the existing jail so that we don't have those in the new jail going.
Well, what kind of problems was that there in the old jail?
There was, we had showers up on the mezzanine level, and I don't know if you heard, but they'd have problems with water coming off the mezzanine, dropping into the day room area below and making it slippery up above. Since we did the first jail, all the jails we've done since then, we've not done that. So we are looking at incorporating that down below. Now, the other thing we're looking at doing then is also bringing the day room plumbing. Like it,
just started
they have to have a day room combination fixture for the inmates to allow them to use toilet facilities and wash hands in the day rooms and not in their cells when they're out during the day. We're bringing that all to the lower level too. So that means we have to do a little reworking on some stuff on the plans to make that happen. There was also an element that they'd asked us to incorporate that would add another medical exam room and holding cell that would be specifically for this new housing pod with Marshal Service inmates. So if they have to take anybody that's sick, they don't have to take them back to the main housing area with all the local inmates, they would have that all in that one housing pod. That and there was some little office area I think was being added for the additional space they need gets expanding, but those kind of little things that we're doing to make those plans more adequate.
There was something in that letter there that spoke of the precast modules not being the same.
Well, that was part of why we suggested it would be good. We want to be able to get the construction manager, in this case White's, on board early. They can help us make some decisions going forward if what we anticipate to be the best way to do it is still the best thing in terms of budget and schedule. Because we know the sooner you guys can get in, the sooner you start getting $150 a day per inmate. So one of the questions that came up was, previously we had precast modules for the cells. Sorry, I'm getting dry. Those original cells had, they have a plumbing chase up front. Actually, it's a utility chase. It has ductwork, conduit, plumbing lines, all to go up and down between the modules from up above to down below. The new modules don't have that anymore. So that all now has to be installed on site. So one of the questions we have for a construction manager is, with that having to be on site, are those still the most cost-effective way to do it? Plus, with some of the lead times we're seeing on precast, is that the best way? One of the other options might be we do all precast outside walls, and then we would come in and do steel cells inside. Maybe that makes more sense. I don't necessarily think so, Larry, but as we're going through work, as architects, we're trying to make those decisions. And if we have a construction manager on board, and say, listen, this is what we're seeing happening with precast prices. This is what we're seeing happening with the utilities and the steel. We'd recommend one way over the other. And even when we walked through earlier today, we made the comment, the precast cells now have precast walkway up above on the mezzanines up above. All the jails have been doing lately have had an open grate mezzanine instead of solid precast. If I do open grate, I don't have to have plumbing underneath. I don't have to have light fixtures underneath because all the plumbing comes down from above. So the question is, should we do, if we do precast, should we do it with a grate mezzanine? Or we're trying to balance, figure out what's going to be the most cost effective and schedule efficient way to do it. And those are things that a construction manager can help us do at this point. Bring in a construction manager, and Ron, I think, will echo this on early, allows us to work quickly with them on those systems and what's the best way to do them.
Washington County, were you involved in it?
I was not, but Whites was, and I'm sure that you can talk to that.
Yeah. What did they do? Did they have the cast, precast mezzanine or graded? Or?
Whites County, they did theirs from scratch. They did steel cells with a rear chase on the steel cell. It makes the footprint grow bigger. It allows you to do maintenance behind the cells. It's been real common today to start doing. We've seen more of those. But in terms of efficiency, getting the footprint down, the front chase cell still works well. One of the things we asked the sheriff was, has maintenance had any problem? Because obviously if I have an issue I need to do in the cell, I'm going to have to lock everybody down in the cell, bring maintenance in, do the work in the chase space, make sure everything's cleaned up and then leave. I said, has that been a problem? They said, it really hasn't been from a maintenance standpoint. Where we've seen the new ones, again, it's been a chase in behind and then steel cells. So there are differences. Again, with Brian and his group having recent experience, they can kind of weigh in. Even if we didn't do a rear chase, suppose we did a steel cell with a front chase. I'm not sure. I think precast is still going to be best, but that's the architect talking that thinks that's probably going to be best. And if we have a CM on board, you say, this is what we're seeing. I don't know if you want
to. Yeah, that's the value in processes like this. If you get a construction manager involved early, you can assess different ideas, both from a cost and schedule standpoint, and make decisions now moving forward, as opposed to once the drawings are completely done, you find out you have to go back and redo them. There is significant time and generally cost savings by bringing a construction manager on early.
So why aren't you on their payroll if they need your advice regularly?
mostly because most owners want a separation between design and construction.
Well, we're not going to get anything done if you guys don't get together and work on it.
And that's why we're proposing that we get them on now and we start working together on this now.
Why weren't they here right away?
What's that?
Why weren't they here right away?
We had two. It was the agreements we had. We weren't sure that was going to be the direction we were going to go on the project. And if it was, when they said, yes, that's the direction we'll go, then we started talking in the house and said, because there's multiple construction managers out there. We said, who do we feel is going to be in the best position to help Dakota County with it? And we had some conversation with the sheriff. There was a couple, two or three that we thought. Came down and said, I think the whites would be because of their recent experience, because they're in Nebraska, because they have a lot of history with shy battery on projects. So at that point we said, okay, if they're the ones, then let's have them come up and talk to you guys so you can get comfortable. I think you came up at, we were able to have a meeting with the sheriff and discuss with them.
Troy, it's very common for the design firm to be hired 30 to 60 days before you bring a construction manager on. We see that quite a bit, but that's still inserting the construction manager early into the process as the idea is developing. So that is pretty common.
I just would have liked to, I would have really liked to know when that was going on right away. I just assumed, or from what I got from the talk, that you guys took care of it and got us the price for, and then we went from there.
And we do have a price. As architects, we do an estimate. In fact, with the jail commit standards, we submitted the estimate that we had on the project. But it's not the same level of estimating that a construction manager brings. We're taking past experience. We're taking, you know, trying to build factors in, looking forward. We're looking at, you know, the area that we're at in Dakota City versus someplace else. So that's the basis we're making this upon. We feel pretty good about them. But again, when we get down to wanting to know what the most cost-effective way is, particularly, I think the last time we were here, we discussed, I mean, the changing markets and where it's going on. If we're moving ahead, is steel going to be the best way or precast? We think now precast, but if he were to tell us what we're seeing, we recommend steel because these are the prices we're seeing. So we're going to make our best projection of what we're going to have, but they can help us on the specifics as we actually look into the pieces. So.
And if we proceed, how many other things do we run into that cost more money that we're not seeing as we go here? I mean,
in terms of, I mean, it's, you got the architect and the construction element, so that's your pieces. The only other things are small things, like they're currently getting some soils borings done on the site. Ron, do you have the list of what the other, some of the other owner expenses are? I think you talked about last time we were here.
Well, the soft costs associated with the project would be, like you said, the cost of the soil borings. What are they going to do for the FF&E costs that would be additional? And we can give them something to break down those costs so that they will know. But usually those costs, including our fee, is approximately 12 to 13%.
One of the questions I have is, you know, I guess I thought this was very preliminary. We were going to get an estimate from the architect, and then we would decide whether we even wanted to move forward. So I feel like we're getting the cart in front of the horse if we're getting a construction manager, whether we don't even know if we're going to do the project. I guess that's where I'm a little fuzzy on the role.
Right.
Why we don't contract with him to help make a good estimate, and then we get the information and decide yay or nay, because honestly, I'm getting feedback from the public that's not, you know,
No, I appreciate that, Jen. Mm-hmm. I think that, and maybe I apologize, we probably maybe didn't communicate that well enough last time, but our original thought was they're going with a construction manager. As soon as we can get that CM on board, that's going to help us get that really good estimate that we need. It's going to be much more detailed than what we have. And knowing that it was going to be CM, I apologize if we didn't communicate that clear enough, but that's part of the reason for them saying, we'll do the pre-con services. Mm-hmm. You're only out that 25 then to get to that point. Now we know exactly what they feel is going to be based on the systems and the materials that are in it. And, you know, compared to the big project, that's
right. Uh-huh.
A small piece. So I apologize if we
didn't.
I can see where that might have been not clearly mm-hmm. communicated.
See, that's what I thought. For the $200,000, I thought that we were going to wind up with a final set of plans and a cost estimate not to exceed. And yet today, we don't have that. We're going to be spending a couple hundred thousand there. You know?
And we can do
we
that.
We don't want to spend another 25, or that 25 might multiply into 100. I mean, I don't know how much time you're going to spend.
It won't multiply. I talked about this a little bit last time, but I want to be clear. It's a fixed amount to get you through the pre-con process.
But then you're going to be the construction manager, so then you'll pick up the 10 to 13% of the project, right?
Only if you decide to move forward, and only if you decide to hire Weitz as your construction manager. What's in front of you today is strictly the pre-construction process to get you to a point where you can really understand the cost, the timeline, and most importantly, the lead time that is really going to affect building components of the jail. The sheriff wants to go today, and I share real information with him that there's materials to be ordered that are literally 8 to 10 months out before we can start going vertical. Those are the things that we help identify to you, to the board, early so that you can make decisions moving forward.
If we were to bring them on after we completed, we can do that. Have schematic done, have our estimate. Here it is, what we feel it's going to be. If at that point you said, now we're going to bring CM on board, at that point he's going to be looking at our documents, figuring out what we have in, what we're not. And I've seen this happen before where they come in and go, you know, if you put in this type of a system on your HVAC, you could have saved a lot. And I've gotten on and going, well, why wouldn't we have done that? And I'm like, we made our best, our engineers made the best, you know, idea of what it's going to be. And then they say, well, we want to change it. And like Brian said, then we're in the redesign time, and then we happen to push the whole thing out. So by doing this early and spend this a little bit up front, I know it's a mile, but to spend this up front, it allows us to get to that where they're on board with everything, we're on board with everything. So at the point you get that and you go, that's it, go, they can actually start looking and maybe make some pre-orders of some of those long things coming out and getting things in place so we can keep moving forward. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Currently there's a company that's putting up a precast building in addition on to an existing building, pretty good size. They can't get the precast in a timely fashion, so they're constructing the panels, the sidewall panels, the beams, and the tees, the roof tees themselves, for them, because they're too far out on ordering. And I mean, that's just one of the examples I'm hearing. I guess if it was my money paying for the thing, I wouldn't do anything until the coast was clear as far as being able to get products within a reasonable length of time at a reasonable price. Right now we're paying 50% more than we should be. And I don't know, I just think it's wrong, the timing's wrong myself, but I guess I don't know where, they're gonna put the federal prisoners if we don't have a jail. Whether it may be Sioux City, I don't know. And it's kind of an unfortunate situation that we're in now. I guess maybe, and it don't sound like COVID's gonna build us a new jail. Virus money, you know. But I don't know, and I just can't.
It may not build a new one, but it might help you with like some of your HVAC.
That's possible. You know, if that system costs $800,000, you know, they might pick up part of it, you know, for the
initial cost. Right.
So would you lock prices in at some point here? In this, and what if they drop?
Well, it's just. Yeah, if they drop, that's a good thing for the county.
So we can, I mean, if we commit to $100 a day and 6 months is $50, we get it for $50?
It depends on the contractual relationship. It depends on when those projects are actually committed and under contract. And now it protects you on the upside, mm-hmm. certainly. Mm-hmm.
Because you're the project manager, you're in a position where you can pay any amount of money you want to pay as long as it's under the not-to-exceed budget, right?
Generally, that's how those are structured.
Yeah.
That the construction manager carries the risk up to the guaranteed price, beyond the guaranteed price.
So if you get that electrician to do it for two-thirds of what was bid, or what you had estimated, you get the other third, or can.
Normally, in a public agency where you're hiring a professional service, any money that's saved would go 100% back to the county. That's the way our Washington County contracts are, are created. That's the way most of our municipal contracts are.
And I think that Brian makes an important distinction. When we talk construction manager agency, you can have a construction manager at risk in their building, and you're right, Larry, if he can get some for less, he pockets that. He pockets it. With an agency, he's managing the project professionally for you, managing the contract. So if it comes in, the bid was two-thirds of what we thought it was going to be, then that's what you're paying. He's got a fixed fee like we have a fixed fee, and you take the benefit of that.
So it'd be handled like a general contractor then?
I don't make a lot of distinction between them, between general contractor, construction manager at risk, or construction manager advisor. Contractually, there's a little bit of difference between at risk and advisor, but all in all, it's managing the entire construction process.
So I got something to say here real quick here. So August 23rd, you came in, and I forget your name, I'm sorry.
Steve Davis.
Steve.
Yep.
Steve comes in with the sheriff. Everybody votes yes, let's move forward on mm-hmm. the architectural plans, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So now the confusion is all of a sudden, the following, a month later, Brian, here comes Brian, and there's a Whites, here they come in, want to, you know, be the construction management company too. And I get it to the fact that maybe that wasn't sold to the board at the time, that, hey, you need a project manager is what you need. And I know a lot of project managers, you know, for different companies around town here, if it's Brown Wagard, et cetera, whatever, and they all have project managers where, you know, the accountants, or not the accountants, but the architects put things together, and then they got the, if you want to call them the general contractor, I get it, but they're the project manager that oversees to make sure that all the general contractors are doing their job and they're following the money.
Sounds good.
What's that?
The subs.
Yeah. They're making sure the sub. If they don't like what a sub's doing, he has the right to say, see you later, you're done, I'm going to find somebody else to finish it up. Yes. Correct? That's basically what it mm-hmm. boils down to. So I think, so back to the 23rd when everybody said, let's move forward on this. You know, we got a game plan with the feds, mm-hmm. the $150 a day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess the $25,000 when, you know, Brian comes in the picture, that kind of threw, I think, a few of the board members for a loop, like, well, hold on here. And I get it. What other costs are we not, you know, sharing? And I think that's kind of what Troy just kind of, you know, laid out. And is it Rob?
Ron.
And Ron, you know, kind of laid out what, you know, some extra, what the extra costs are going to be. But I guess we need to figure out as a board, did we have a change of heart if it's something that we don't want to do now? Or, you know, like Chair Janet said, you know, are we getting the cart, you know, ahead of the horse? I don't know. But to my recollection, I thought that everything was a go. And then, of course, I mean, I get the project manager situation. And maybe that, like you said, that wasn't totally laid out because they thought that
sure.
the architect was here. The architect was. He's going to monitor all the monies. He's going to do this and this and that. But
architects don't typically monitor.
Right, I understand that. I don't know. I wasn't here, so I don't know how it was addressed.
I can tell you, though, Scott, that since that meeting, we have been moving forward with the plans.
Okay.
We've been moving forward, developing, like I said, incorporating some of those pieces that we talked with the sheriff about. We've been able to submit it to the jail standards. So we've got the big picture of the general, what the plans are, what the cells are, where they're going to go, and how everything's going to lay out.
We need this guy is what we need.
To really get to that next step to where we say, okay, we got the all cells. What's the best one for the cell?
Right.
We've got a mezzanine. What's the best way to do mezzanine? We're going to be looking at HVAC. What's the best way to do our HVAC? Yep. I think you can get it there on that.
I mean, but like I said, I just think this board needs to figure out, did they have a voting remorse going on? I don't know. I'm not speaking for anybody, but I'm just saying that it just seems like, you know, I don't know. I don't know where everybody's at.
Ron can say too, but I apologize if that wasn't communicated. But when we talked originally, we said, we're the designers. We will come in and design. And our contract we're proposing is based on construction management services. And so you will have to hire a construction manager. We're just recommending to get the best value out of that. get them on board to do these pre-con services first, and then we're going to get the best, really their best point where they can make input.
And they're just coming out of, was it Washington County, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. You know, my understanding is this where the money's coming from, is that going to be Dakota County taxpayers paying for this, or is it going to be the federal government?
I think it was U.S. Marshals Service.
This is the way that I was told by the sheriff that the dollar amount was $65 per day per inmate, and then he raised it to $80 a day to cover these expenses here. Is that correct, Ryan?
That is not correct.
Okay.
Because what they're doing right now, it's $65 a day for feds right now, but when this jail gets built, it'll be bringing in $150 per federal inmate until it's paid off.
Right. Regardless of if it's full or not. 120 beds, if you got 20 prisoners in there, they're still paying $150 a day per bed.
Yeah,
I thought the sheriff told me that he just raised it to 80.
There was a bump.
Since it goes up to 150, once the loan's paid off, or the whatever is paid off, then it goes down to 85 versus being 65. So they raised it up $20.
But I do think that when they signed the agreement to say we're going to do this, at least the guy from the Marshal Service said, today, you now go to 80. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what the sheriff told me.
And then it goes up to 150. Okay. Okay.
So that's where the sheriff was saying it went from 65 to 80 to cover these expenses that are going on if we move forward on this.
That's what I understand too.
Yeah. Because you're going to have that 150, to have somebody on not only looking at the dollars and cents, but also the time, because every day that you aren't open, that you could have been open, that's however much times 85 inmates that day. So we really want to prosecute and move it forward. Our plan is to be issuing for some of the bid packages in January. And again, I think as Brian shared, if he were to come out at that point and he were looking and say, if you'd done it like this, you could have saved money. And then if we're told, well, we want to redesign it and do it like that, then we've taken a step back.
Because I remember the time frames, Brian, if I remember right, at the last meeting you were saying within 60 days, was it 60 days or by January 31st or by March or February 1st, the numbers should be...
We should be able to establish a guaranteed maximum price.
That's that kind of thought when that was discussed.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where, you hit the nail on the head there. We think the cost of estimates were going to be covered by this bump that happened almost... August, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I guess my question is, I thought that gave us a win. We would have an opportunity to make a decision at that point when we got that. And also, like I said, I think the public's weighing, we need to get some public weigh in. And what I've heard there's been some concerns, not about what you guys are doing at all, just in general, the concept of.
I think if it's on the ballot, it wouldn't fly from what people tell me.
Well, sure, it wouldn't. There's not a doubt in my mind it wouldn't fly, if it was on the ballot. No way. A lot of things wouldn't fly on the ballot in today's world. But if the sheriff has an agreement and with the feds that they're going to pay X amount of dollars until this thing's paid for, then what are they figuring, 30 months?
30 months is what I always thought it was.
Is that what it was, 30 months?
Was it 30 months?
10 years, or yes, 30 months for the 150, and at that point, I think they
did a 10-year contract.
$80-something.
Yeah.
$150 for a guaranteed
85
beds for 30 months.
Right.
Yeah. Whether they put one in or not.
Yeah.
If that
don't figure out to get it paid off that quick.
About $15 million.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, yeah.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is, I think where I've sat down and figured this out, you're not going to fill that thing immediately, so you're going to be... You're going to have some surplus monies happening there that's going to be going right in the general fund. And I've said this several times, even during my first 8 years before I took 2 years off, came back. There's always a problem of trying to find revenues for the county. The county just does not have a lot of revenue streaming into this building. And period. So I think this, I don't know, I can't see the negatives of it, but I'm sure they're, it all depends who you talk to, that they got to be housed somewhere. And if the feds are willing to...
Sheriff Kleinberg made the comment, I think, last time that if they only have 40 in, I can go ahead and rent out beds to another county that may need it. I just have to be able to say, If you have more, I'll open it up and get you in.
But if they bring some, if they're full and they got to bring a bunch of people in, he has to get rid of some people and make sure that they're taken care of. They got first priority.
Yep.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Okay.
Ron, is there anything that I missed?
So back to your question, Lou, that was kind of the sheriff's intent was to, it's not going to be a taxpayer's expense from the 65 to the 80. So that's, I think that's where the sheriff was coming from by getting the $80 from the feds to cover these expenses.
I might add too, and I don't know, Brian, if you shared this last time, but he was sharing with us in doing the pre-con services in Washington County. Was he saving about $1 million in construction advising different systems and materials?
It was $1 million of choices that the board had the option to decide to save money, and they took the majority of them.
Well, I think this is where the confusion's been, is because if, you know, I can understand it if the taxpayers of Dakota County is paying for this, that'd be one thing. But if the feds are going to pick this up and help the county, but what kind of guarantee is that? You know, I mean, then that, with the feds doing it, that's a different issue of building this jail. You know, so the taxpayers here are not hurt.
There's a there'll be a an agreement between Dakota County and the U.S. Marshals. I'm sure it's already been signed.
It has for 10 years.
10 years. So that's a guarantee.
So it's guaranteed that the feds will
10 years at $150 a bit times 85.
$150 until the jail is paid for, and then it goes to $85 per day.
80, right?
80? I thought, is it 85 or 80?
I think it was 85, but it might be
80. Okay, I heard 85. I heard 80 until sold. I don't know.
But until the jail is paid for, that assumes we're going to build one. I mean, how do we even know we're going to build one? I mean, I thought this was all hinging on.
That was already passed.
I don't think so.
I haven't seen it.
I don't think so. I thought we were doing all the research to decide whether we were going to move forward.
We wanted to get a price and see.
Yeah, that was what we were told then, to get a price to determine whether we were willing to move forward.
But I think what they're probably thinking is, hey, we're willing to pay for this thing, so if it costs $12 million or $15 million, we're going to pay for this jail and do a 10-year contract with you.
Correct.
Is that wrong or right?
That's right.
You know, that's kind of the way I took it.
But it's for 10 years or 150 a day or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I thought in 30 months it drops down to 85.
That's what they think it's going to take 30 months to pay for the jail is what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Because they're going to pay for every bed in there. If there's 120 beds, they're going to give us $150 a day per bed. If there's 20 prisoners in there or 40, they're going to pay for the maximum.
Well, I didn't understand it that way. I thought it was the beds they were going to...
No, they're going to pay for the maximum.
I think in their maximum, their guaranteeing is 85.
Is that what their guarantee is, 85?
If they come up, though, and they say, hey, we need 120...
Jesus Christ, that 85 number just keeps sticking around, doesn't it?
That's why it'd be nice to see this, in paper. I've never seen it on paper. I don't know.
What do you mean?
Well, whether it's $100 a day or $85 a day or... 150 a day.
It's 80. Okay. I can bring that up if you want.
Yeah, we'll all be quiet and let Joan talk here for a minute. She'll set us straight, I promise you.
That's what the clerks do.
Huh?
That's what the clerks do.
I guess I didn't think that we committed to this until, I mean, that's where my head was at. I thought we weren't committed until we saw the numbers and then we could make a decision. And then in the meantime, of course, the public is going to weigh in on this as well. It was my thought.
I kind of wanted to know what it was going to cost.
They did talk about possibly looking at the rate of $80 will be looked at again.
That's why I thought that they were going to kind of negotiate.
Yeah, that
so 80, there may be more, might be more.
Dakota County Jail will guarantee 85 beds to USMS, the United States Marshal Service, for the next 10 years. The USMS will pay for the actual occupied beds.
Well, now that ain't what Chris said.
That's after the 30 months. If we look at, if they would put in, we do all 110 beds,
at $150 a bed for 30 months. That's $15 million, over $15
million. But what's it cost us to house them a day? I'm not saying
I figured 1.5 is what I figured. 250 for operating supplies, radios, meds, salaries. We're at the new rates that we have our contract at. Insurance, retirement, Social Security.
All expenses.
So this is net. The 10,534 was net at the 85, just 85. But if we would get more, or there would, if we house more than the guaranteed 85, this is pretty much guaranteed. 30 months, 85 beds, $150. That's what they guarantee. That's what they were shooting at, was that to pay.
That's 10.5.
Yeah. And that's with 15 or 25 more employees?
Yes, that's net.
For the same 15 more employees?
150 plus a nurse, plus food, plus clothing, plus radios, plus retirement, insurance, and benefits.
Plus repairs down the road, 15 years.
Hopefully not within the first 30 months.
Again, what's in front of you today, I think, helps you get to that point mm-hmm. to make a really good decision one way or the other. Right now, it's a magnitude price, and we think it'll take this long to build. We're going to be able to define those for you so that you can go talk to the constituents and see if this is something you want to proceed with.
Okay, now the $25,000 that you want to get to come to this, mm-hmm. to this point of constructing this, do the feds pay for that too?
That's, I believe, coming out of the $80 a bed now that they're paying. That's, they've already signed that agreement, so you're already getting the extra money in beds. I think the sheriff said he felt like that's where some of this upfront money.
That's where he indicated that the upfront money, when we raised it, that right. it would go towards the planning and
estimate,
yeah,
design,
estimations,
scheduling.
And all that. Yeah,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think that's what he said.
Yeah,
that's part of it.
Uh huh. So it's covered by the increased inmate per diem or per diem, mm-hmm. I guess, or whatever it's called.
So am I safe to say, so that's kind of already been committed to that?
Yes.
To this estimate?
To this study? Is that what mm-hmm. it is, a study, basically?
Mm-hmm. I plan to put all that money that we get from the feds into mm-hmm. that account.
Mm-hmm.
That's my plan.
Yeah.
And what are we getting a day? What have we gotten? Federal prisoners. We got 554 in 1819, 823, 710. We've gotten 45,000 in July. We've gotten 42,000 in August. I'm hoping to see that jump.
It hit the September.
In September.
Should be hitting a million this year, I bet. Did that?
His fiscal year?
Back to where it used to be, yeah. 1.2. Well, she ended at 200 too. Got ugly for a bit. But that was people who was running it too. That was a problem.
It was.
I mean, seriously, it was that exactly what happened. Mm-hmm.
This pre-construction agreement, I mean, this is, but what from what you're saying, there's going to be revenue. It would just make the project go a little fast track, and that's kind of what I'm hearing. It's not necessarily if we decide to move forward.
Larry, I think you might point out last time, with the market the way it's going, it's really important, Brian, you mm-hmm. jump into being looking at what those projects are, or materials that we can get that we don't have as long a lead item, or if we do have it, get it in as early as possible so it doesn't delay us down the road.
Mm-hmm.
They can be tracking that as they're doing an estimate. This is what we're going to recommend. This can be lead time on it. as soon as you say go, this is probably one of the first ones we want to get out to bid.
And this is Ron Hines, and the way we've formulated our contract is we formulated our deliverables so that you can do what's called a fast-track construction, where you get a deliverable in January for the site, footings and foundations, et cetera, so that the contractor can get started. Prior to that, you would get have a GMAX established with the Weitz company. So the construction management process is the fastest way for you to get started on construction and get things in the ground and get going on the project to get your project built. Otherwise, you're waiting until February or March to have a completed set of bid documents that will take another 4 weeks to bid, and then it'll take another 3 to 4 weeks for the contractor to mobilize, so you would not be beginning construction until April or after.
That's good information, and I got to tell you something, Ron, you scared the hell out of me. I forgot you were on the phone. You start talking.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I forgot you were on the phone.
You're hearing things.
Jeez, I was like, what the hell, who's that talking? Anyways, no, it...
And I might add, anybody that's built buildings before, too, knows what happens. Sometimes you go out to bid, and then the bids come in, and they're high. Mm-hmm. Well, what can we do now to get it down? And like you said, now you're back and forth. It's like when you have him on board making those decisions, going along with that, eliminates those surprises.
If we're moving forward, we got to hire a pre-construction. I mean, there has to be a project manager if we're going to move forward. That's all there is to it. I mean, there's no way around it.
Can I ask another question? You know, so when was the bid change, you know, the room changed from whatever it was to 65 to 88, 85?
August 23.
Okay, so how much of that 25,000 has been made?
I haven't seen those numbers yet. We'll get an October jail report. And Mark didn't have it put together, so we're not going to get that September report until October 18th.
Okay, so you don't know what
I haven't seen the numbers yet.
Has been made yet. But let's say that even if the board commits to that, I mean, that's still going to progress, so this company is still paid the $25,000 to do the study here.
Because currently we're going up to $80 a day. If we have 30 feds every day, it's $14,000 a month, basically.
Oh, $14,000 a month.
Correct. That's $14,000 more than it was. Mm-hmm. It would have been $58,500 before.
But this is a monthly fee of $25,000 that...
it's a total fee.
One-time fee.
You know what I'm going to do here, and I don't know, we can keep talking about this all night long, but from 2 weeks ago, obviously, you know, chairs here, and here we got a full board, so last time it was 2-2. And it did not pass. So I'm gonna make a motion, because if we're gonna move forward on this thing, and from the 23rd of August that, you know, we thought we were gonna, but you gotta have a project manager. I'm gonna make a motion to approve of using the pre-construction service agreement with Dakota County and White's company out of La Vista for the phase two construction of the project. That's my motion. I'll see where it goes.
I'll second it. I seconded it last time, I think.
Okay, Bob, Scott and Bob on that motion. Any other discussion? We'll still get an estimate. We'll get an estimate either way from, okay. Any other questions? Okay. Roll call.
Troy?
No.
Janet?
No.
Scott?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
No.
gentlemen, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming. Appreciate you coming. Okay. Jolene.
Come on down.
Googles. We've got our Highway Superintendent Biweekly Road Report.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there. The guys maintained 232 hours. We had 2 hours of tree removal, 9 hours of working up Lynch Avenue, 5 hours reshaping up the Jackson High Bridge so we could get that open, worked on the approaches and put some gravel down, 8.5 hours picking up gravel, or picking up garbage, 52 hours hauling gravel. They hauled 755 tons of 3/4 clean. They spent 4 hours spraying weeds. They did the weeds around the bridges, the bridge approaches, some signs there. 43 hours on sign repair. And we had requests for grading on Blyberg Road, 110th Street, M Avenue, and gravel requests on Pigeon Avenue. Jackson High Bridge is open. The Kenny Burcham Bridge, they were finishing up doing some stuff today and tomorrow, and that one should be opened. The Willis Bridge, the crew is on vacation this week, so hopefully by the end of next week, they'll be finishing that up, but we'll see.
I noticed the road's open to Jackson High Bridge when I was out there this weekend. Mm-hmm.
The contractors on the Willis Bridge were hoping to move right over to the Homer Bridge, but the steel contractor can't get the beams they need, so that's going to be put on the back burner for a little bit until that comes in.
Do we have a signed contract with them for that bridge at Homer?
Yes, that all went through the Micro and...
Signed them and sealed them.
That we opened bids for that.
But I mean, the contract has been finalized and Janet signed off on it. And
I don't know, Dan. I was gone last meeting, so I don't know. I might have. Did I come in the next day and sign it?
Did they send? I guess I'm not sure if Mike sent out a proceed.
What bridge
to start the
work?
The 265th Street Bridge.
Because it'd be the bonds of performance and maintenance and insurance.
I'm pretty sure all that stuff was included with the bids. All the contractors usually...
Well, they don't ever send the performance and maintenance with it. It's just a bid bond.
I can check with Mike.
You're real unusual if they did, because the bonding agents, they don't go through the trouble of...
What bridge?
Right, I'm not using.
The Homer Bridge, 265th Street.
Omaha Creek.
Yeah, that's the one. We all have a different name for it.
This is the one we got the match for.
Correct.
Okay. And I got 265th agreement here. So here's the...
That's the engineering proposal.
That's signed. I guess I'm not sure what you're looking for. Was the bid let?
Yeah.
Okay. So that hasn't come back yet from the bidder, is what you're...
Yeah.
I haven't seen
that. Okay. I'll talk to Mike about it.
Were you on... are we ready for another... related topic? I got an email on the Veterans Drive. I think, is that in this packet?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Veterans Drive, the median of Veterans Drive, concern from a citizen. I did drive out there and take a look at it. I didn't think it looked, I mean, it's not park-like by any stretch, but it was mowed.
Is that what you mowed, Scott?
I mowed up to the house from the time you come off 39th Street and go around so far, and then I don't even know where Chuck Coon, mm-hmm. where he lived.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there on, the center's not mowed because nobody can tell you who owns the center.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
That's kind of what all their questions are now.
Right.
Who owns the center?
Who owns it? And there's lots of trees. I mean, you know, lots of trees with things around them and light posts and all kinds of things around there. I can imagine it's a challenge to mow.
Oh, it's challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I, and I sent
her. Well, I would have to assume that South Sioux's the one that put that in, and if they did that type of work, I don't know why they wouldn't.
Well, that, we paid, we gave them $1 million to do it, pave the road, but then I guess we're expected to mow it too, at least that's been the case in the past, but I mean, it looks way better than any of the county roads that the, where the farmer guys don't mow. You know, some farmer guys are really good about it, it looks like a lawn, but the other guys, they got weeds about as high as my truck, sunflowers, big ones.
Well, you got like Denny Bly down there that will mow in front of his place, and Mike Miller. You know, we just kind of whip it out. But I know what you're saying, though, Janet, is from the center going to the north.
So it's all the way from 39 or almost to
140. Basically from the Sweetwater
to the middle of the road.
It's close to the middle of the right of way, but I'm not what right of way. That's pretty wide because it's two lane, you know, I mean, it's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So who does the middle? Yeah, that's what I think.
Is that who the question? Is that what the question was?
Yeah, the median. That's what when I
the center median.
The median. Sour dock in there, but a weed sprayer get that pretty easy.
But is it regular grass or is it?
It's just grass.
It's
weeds.
Grass.
Some weeds are tall.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it's
some
trees,
tall.
And it's trees that they planted too. I mean, that somebody planted.
Way at the other end, though, correct? I don't think there's any trees on the county standpoint.
Okay, I was thinking, because I went down to Sweetwater, because that's the end of it, and there was trees all the way through the middle in there.
Yeah, maybe if you go from there south.
I've never seen anything so complicated where the county has X amount of feet to 29th, and then from 29th to the dog park or to Veterans, what do you want to call it, that Sullivan Road, but the O'Foundry Road, the city does that, Ho-Chunk does that, and then from there north, the city takes care of. It's messy.
So we don't know who's supposed to do it?
The landowners are.
The landowners.
But with the centerpiece, we don't know. I guess I don't. Mm-hmm. They've asked me that. Who takes care of the center then if we take care in front of our homes in the fields? I'm like, I
and maybe we need to talk to Lance was here. I should have talked to Lance and Ho-Chunk. I think they're the ones with the vested interest with the street lights and the.
The development. The only thing that really bothers a lot of people is, you know, the Veterans Drive is for the veterans,
mm-hmm.
and just the way it looks. You know, you hear a lot mm-hmm. of criticism of it should look a lot better than what it does, mm-hmm. of where the road goes to. You know,
yeah,
I can understand that.
That's, like I said, the median is probably the place that we need to figure out what to do. But the sides, it's pretty clear to me who should be taking care of those.
Right.
But the middle is.
I know when this mowing issue come up back in, was it June or July mm-hmm. or whatever, we kind of talked maybe doing some sort of interlocal agreement with South Sioux or mm-hmm. to get something figured out on what needs to be done down there. I mean, right now we're not budging and they're not budging and so mm-hmm. nothing's getting done.
Well, the way I got it, Jolene, was I talked to a couple of the city officials about it, of some type of interlocal agreement, and I think they basically laughed at us about it. You know, or laughed about the interlocal agreement to do it. And I was just like, well, you know, somebody needs to take care of it. I mean, the investment, the $4.5 million investment that everybody, you know, the few entities that chipped in on this ordeal, it's a shame the way it has to look. It shouldn't look like that.
Since it's leading to the park, I mean, you would think South Sioux's Park and Recreations would be.
Yeah, and see the big statement there is we have to mow 260 acres and we don't have enough staff to take care of the 260 acres that we get to mow. You know, is what they say. And you know, I don't know what the answer is. I don't.
Who's drawing the tax revenue off of all of that? Is it part of it is in the TIF and part of it's the county?
That spot there, I don't think is TIF right.
That's
there.
Okay.
The Ho-Chunk Village is, and we get very little revenue from that at the moment.
Is that TIF, Christy? All of that in there?
Yeah.
The road's not. No. And see, we were kind of hoping that the city was going to annex it in at one time, and they talked about it, but, you know.
If you look at this map, does not it not show the right-of-way? It's called Redfern's Drive Right-of-Way Exhibit Map. I mean, it has the, it shows it there, and it shows 150 feet, and it shows...
See, can you scroll down, or go, yeah, that way? See, there's the sub, this here's the substation, right, or that lift station they have right here, is right here, okay? So, Bennett Avenue's the ground, okay, right here. So if you go, if the road, the road kind of comes around here, and then what happens is it's being mowed, the center is being mowed right to here. So from there all the way up around, it's not being mowed. So right from here, I don't know who called you.
I got an email. I think I think you did too. I think we were all in the email.
Really?
I think so.
Well, that to the right of the road there shows the house right in the right of way. If the darn is right of way.
You're talking from the lift station on, Scott?
From the lift station on is not being mowed. Maybe a little bit north or south of the lift station. South of the lift station.
Did you?
I mowed right to the house there, in front of her house.
Okay.
That's what I mowed to.
But did anybody ever mow that? Do you know?
Well,
the rest of it.
Well, the problem is 3 years ago when we started mowing in the county, it was taller than. It was taller, you know, there were sunflowers that were taller than the ceiling, and we went down and cleaned it all up, and then...
All the way
to 29th Street.
Okay.
And then from there, it was the Ho-Chunk or the city of South Sioux City.
So do we need to contact Security National Bank and Oler King Holdings? I mean, are they doing anything, or are they...
Yeah, because it looks like right up to there.
They must not be.
Only thing I can say... is it would really be a mess if we would have had the normal rainfall that we had, but since it was a drought, I call it a drought, I made that comment, it would have really been bad.
It would have been, too. It already grew last summer.
Yeah, it would have been really, really bad.
Oh, I can, should I call Lance and Ho-Chunk and just see if they, or should I check with the bank? Security National Bank.
I'd start with Lance.
I would, too. I wouldn't,
I mean... It's either going to be yes or no. They're going to say yes or no, and then we go from there.
Okay.
I should have had sweet corn.
What's the question to Lance?
That'd be perfect.
Sure.
If,
sunflower seeds.
Yeah, sunflower seeds.
If that's the city's...
All the improvements on there, are they city improvements?
Yeah.
All mm-hmm. those improvements? The light poles, the
storm sewers,
boxes,
yeah.
The...
Yeah, they did all that.
Yeah, when I first started mowing it with that big, the John Deere, they had nothing down there. And it was pretty simple. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they started throwing all the light poles up and MVPD and all the big electrical box. Oh boy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I thought it was TIFT, because that's what you use TIFT money for street improvements, don't you?
It's not TIFT. Mm-hmm. It's not TIFT.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll call Lance. That's what I'll do. And then so, if that doesn't work well.
So the whole we need to know about the whole thing, not just that.
Well, I think they got the landowners taking care of things for the time being.
Just a couple areas.
On the areas, yeah. Okay. But down the centers. You go ahead.
Okay.
For what it's worth, sorry, I apologize for interrupting.
That's right.
No, appreciate it.
It's interesting that you're bringing this up because, and I'll make a plug for our legislative conference, which is next week in Holdridge. That's either here or there. Bill Tilkey over in Holt County has brought up the issue about trees and right-of-way. Mm-hmm. And he thinks that's something that needs to be clarified in statutes. That's something that the NACLA board will be considering at a legislative conference next week. We've been working on it as far as NACLA staff is concerned. And, you know, if you look at Nebraska Revised Statute 39-18-12, I think, that's the statute that governs landowners' responsibility to trim back trees that are in a right-of-way, and whether it's a public nuisance and all this other fun stuff that Kim's probably more knowledgeable than I am on. So, for what it's worth, this is something that you agree or you think it requires further clarification. I know that Bill Tilkey would love to have, be able to stand up at the legislative conference and say, I heard from Dakota County since they're in my district. And they have the same issue. There's a couple other counties that are also encountering the same issue. So I'm just pointing that out that as part of the legislative conference, if you wanted to contact your Northeast District Representative, who's Bill Tilkey, or your Northeast District Representative, who's on the Executive Board for NACO, who's Judy Munzenberger, who's our first Vice President, Certainly would recommend it. That's you know, that's an avenue. It appears that this, as I've gone to county board meetings, this issue keeps coming up, or at least it's happened more often than not that you hear that they have a conversation. So I just wanted to put that out there as something that may help, not currently, but certainly in the future, as far as clarifying statute.
Clarification, yeah.
The state statute is kind of a little bit odd, because I think they got to have it mowed. They got to mow twice a year, landowners, before just July 31st and August
September.
31st or September 1st or something. It's something, it's really strange.
It is peculiar.
It is. It really is. And so, but like Larry said, a lot of, some of the bigger farmers will do it, and people that care, but most of them don't do it.
Yeah. So I just pointed that out, that if you agree that it requires some clarification.
That's a good idea. That's a good, I did talk to Bill about that, because he told me they were having the same.
See, Joan, see that? Move back down. Bring that up. No. Now, see that portion right there? See, that's all taken from the one landowner to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it's taken from the other guy. So that would throw all the load onto that guy, because that would truly be, it was part of his property. So does he have to mow the entire road
here,
going on across?
So how does that work with his property line being to the west of that road? I mean, it shows his property line going across four lanes of...
Okay, yeah, because since there's a road here,
yeah.
Since there's a road right here that goes in front of these houses right here, okay, they would be responsible for this little strip right here.
Yeah, once upon a time. See?
Okay,
yeah.
But this here... You would think that they would be responsible to do the centerpiece here, correct?
Well, the entire right of way, actually, but the whole right of way is on that guy's ground, because that yellow line there
goes over in his eyes.
Yeah, that little yellow line there is the center line of the existing road.
Oh,
you can't go by that.
That's in pencil. That's in pencil.
It's not legal.
Yeah, it's really, really close.
Who put that yellow line there? It's your office putting that yellow line there.
That is a suggestion. That will not hold up in court. You deserve it.
I'll bet you that old gravel road there, I'll bet you was built on those two properties. Centered up.
I'll call Lance, and then I'll talk to Bill and Judy. But we might have to talk to the bank about, it was this one, Olerking. I don't know. That
Olerking.
Was, Olerking.
Olerking. Yeah, they own both of those.
Olerking. Yeah. Looks like the one, right?
Yeah.
Olerking. I don't know who they are, but... Maybe I'll get that from Christy.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll talk to me if we're going to buy something.
Doesn't okay. It always come back on the landowner, though?
Supposed to.
All three parcels on mm-hmm. that.
They own a bunch of that.
Yeah.
And if they own it to the yellow line, they own the whole road.
Yeah.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Who farms that, Larry?
Oh, I don't even know.
It's not Gene?
No, not no more. Well, I don't think he ever mowed. I don't know. No, he used far more further to the right up in there. Some of it up in there, and then straight down Miller, past Miller, the Red Barn. There's a piece of Miller's back behind there.
Yeah,
he used to. I don't know if he still does. I suppose maybe still does.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I see him in a tractor down there. But
well, they might imagine. I don't know either. I know.
Okay, I'll commit to doing that, and then we'll see where we go with that. But yeah, I'll reply to her and told her we would talk about it. Okay. I just realized that Dawn's been sitting back there the whole time. I forgot about Dawn back there. We can maybe do filling each up with Jolene's stuff. Surplus report for the equipment sold on road department with Big Iron. And I think there's a receipt in here for that. $6,666.55 from the utility trailer proceeds purchased by somebody from Colorado. Holy buckets.
That proceeds is $6,566.31.75.
Yeah. Do we need to approve that or a report?
Report.
Okay. All right. D, board approve of change order contracts application for payment number 3, which is the final. And a certificate of substantial completion for the Waterbury South Bridge. And that's in your packet as well. Any comments on this one, Jolene? Looks like $269,000 or $270,000 right around there.
Yeah, that's what we
split that with Dixon County.
Amount due this time is 15, the final.
Oh, that's all that's left on that one?
Yeah, this one will be open tomorrow. Then eventually, Lexus will get the culvert out of there.
And the project actually is left, right?
Yeah.
Just the one that went, what?
$305.
$325. Less is the change order.
Okay, so our final payment is $15,504.80.
I'll move to approve.
Okay, Bob? Larry, Bob, any discussion? Roll call on that one?
Janet?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
All right. All right, thanks, Jolene, and.
Thank you, Jolene.
I think we're gonna skip Sheriff since he's not here, and Don. And the jail report wasn't ready anyway, I think, computer issues, what have you.
I moved it to next agenda.
Yep, that was moved. Okay, Don. Tax refund request for parcel in South Sioux City Schools.
We have a tax correction here, refund request regarding refund to the investor. This property was on the tax sale. You should have the information in your, I think we gave it to Joan today.
It's laid on everybody's desk.
Okay, it's under here then.
And they'll be getting a total of $7,393.92 from the tax roll correction. Will be returned to the investor. We won't be doing this until after you approve, hopefully today. So we do need an additional check, you know, as of today is 8/29/86, or not today, tomorrow. And, you know, providing everything goes as planned. And that equals through tomorrow's date, the interest paid, advertising interest, and interest owed. So the amount that we would need is the check of 8/29/86 that should be going through claims through Joan. And we did confirm that through Kim, it appears to her that the purchaser is owed the amount he has paid plus interest. So we need.
829 was 829.
Yeah.
I thought we did that in the
$829.86.
Okay.
Additional.
Additional.
Yes.
That is the claim.
Okay. Yeah, I think we. I'll make a motion to do the tax refund of $829.86 for that parcel. Janet, Bob, any questions?
Scott?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Sorry, Don. I was thinking we did that at the beginning. It's my fault.
Well, it's all kind of turned around a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't realize it till I saw her still here. My fault. Okay, now we have a closed session, or is there anything we need to talk about that's not. We got somebody here to talk about something.
See you guys.
Okay, thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your time.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Appreciate everything.
Happy trip back.
Keep up the good work, right?
Yep.
I'll make a motion to go to a closed session.
All right, thanks, Scott. Scott. Troy, closed session. Here we go. They shut the door on you. Okay, we are going into closed session regarding our union contract negotiations.
And the time
is 4:58. All right. Yeah, it's been a long way, hasn't it?
We have the policeman coming back.
Yeah, right. Nobody's seen that, did they? Come on in.
I heard it. Ow.
He just slapped me on the side.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Probably broke a rib.
Do you get workman's comp for that then?
I suppose.
Okay, so listen, I'll make a motion to come out of closed session.
Okay, Scott,
and
motion.
Then, and then what?
Second.
And then use the restroom.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Okay.
Okay.
Scott, yes.
Okay, Rob?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes. Okay. All right. We have, okay, we have, we discussed this.
Waiting for Troy?
Oh.
Scott to come back.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right.
He'll be back.
I forgot, he would stepped out, because he said yes.
Yes, alter. Christie, how's it going in the assessor's office? Angie? What did Tom Harris's place bring?
I don't see it yet.
You haven't seen it, okay.
I knew it was under what they were asking.
In the threes then?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe on this side now.
Do you turn back this place?
Dog.
Star wrestler right here.
Yeah.
Him?
Well, at least it was at least it was open.
It was open. Open.
I'm going in for surgery.
Yeah.
Before I get down here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody's seeing that, though, did they?
No.
Okay, so we're at a closed session. No. Item H on the agenda here. Board to approve or not approve the sheriff, deputy, and correctional officer fraternal order of police's request to come back to the bargaining table. We have discussed that, and we would like to sit down and visit with you. We don't necessarily want to reopen the contract, but we do want to sit and visit with you. And is that okay? You want to just sit down and...
Okay, so I guess my question to you is this. If we sit down and talk, are we going to be able to change anything?
And if we're not wanting to reopen the contract, we want to talk about in general.
So then,
the process.
If we want to reopen the contract, we got to go to arbitration. So you're saying you want to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to do that? I think that's silly. I really do. We're very close. You know, Bob and Scott both said, "Hey, we'll do whatever we can to get back to the table," but apparently, no one else wants to.
I guess.
That was in the meeting.
I think that as far as sitting down and talking, I mean, I think it would be beneficial to all of us. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's like a good point if we can't change anything.
I think.
Well,
it would be
well, I guess maybe do I need to make a motion? I guess I didn't realize I probably need to make a motion on that first, right?
Yeah. On.
Yeah.
G.
No.
H.
No.
H.
Or H. You know, and yeah. By sitting down and talking. Sit down and have a conversation. I don't want to say, and this is me talking, okay? And I don't know who we're going to sit down and talk to with and this and that, but, you know, maybe by sitting down and talking, who's to say that, hey, there might be able to make some changes? I don't know. You know, just sit down and talk. Is that possible? I don't know. I don't think any of this board wants to walk away and say this is the way it's going to be for the next 4 years. We'd like to talk to you guys and sit down and have a conversation.
Well, and the board understands that legally you cannot bind us into a four-year contract that we don't agree on. The old contract is binding until we agree to a new one. You can make any resolution you want. It's not legal. It's not legit. It doesn't carry no law.
And I thought that that's what we did at the last meeting, was talk. And now the answer is, let's talk some more, and maybe we can do something about it. I mean, Brian's right. If you guys won't agree to come back to the table and negotiate, then it's a moot point. I don't understand what sitting on talk is going to do. We're having an open meeting right now. Let's talk.
I'm not sure, honestly, though, that we can, with what is on the agenda today, we can't rescind a motion that we made before on the contract. All that's on here is today is to reopen it, which we can do, until we rescind that. We can't do, it's putting the...
So are you guys still looking into that?
It's putting the cart before the horse.
Oh, right. I understand that. Makes sense.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, is it the board's plan to rescind the resolution so we can sit back down? Because like what Jan said is, that's not the plan. And if it's not the plan, then we're going to have to take it to a vote and see where that vote takes us. It's going to cost the union $10,000-$12,000, but we're willing to spend it. And it's going to cost the county more than that. 2 to 3 times more. And that's what Pixley won. I'm sure you understand that. When he made that resolution and wrote in there, Nebraska Commission of Industrial Relations, that is arbitration. So he's basically saying, look, you don't want to agree? Take it to arbitration. Because he's going to line his pockets full of money. And I explained that to Janet and Troy the day they passed that resolution. But for some reason, it didn't click.
Well, when the final offer was made, we were at the table then.
Correct.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's kind of where the confusion came into play.
Issue
that's
was,
why we want to sit down and maybe re-explain or talk about the process.
Well, and that's that was the issue. And the issue was the first two meetings we had, there was only 5-6 people showed up. Well, in that final meeting with the final offer, we had like 15. And of course, you know, they come in late. They go, I don't like that. I don't like this. I don't like that. You know, so it's partially some of the deputies' faults for not coming to meetings. But we go through this every year. Every negotiation contract, we go through the same crap. You know, they want to not come to the meetings, and they want to come to one meeting and say, nah.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And it's a headache for me. I mean, this has literally stressed me the frick out. I mean, I already got other issues from other stuff, but yeah, it's just, I mean, you guys see me reading that letter the other day, or that couple weeks ago. I mean, I was shaking, red, sweating.
I did see, though, Brian, the wage increases on a lot of people as it sits now. You know, minimum was 3 and up to 14%, I heard, on some people.
Well, and honestly, it's not about the wages.
No.
We're happy with the wages. You know, the court pays a big thing. I mean, for 25 plus years, they've set a precedent in paying court pay at time and a half. And, you know, again, any judge looks at that, you set a precedent for 25 years doing it, so yeah, you probably want to keep doing it.
That's what we've been doing.
Yes, over 25 years.
Was time and a half on court pay?
Court pay. Because the thing is, you know, it's on your day. If it's on your day off, you got to get up, get dressed, and Fair Labor Standards Act say you have to pay them from the time they get up and start getting dressed till the time they get home.
Well, then it'd be outside of your work hours, so you would automatically be on overtime.
Not unless you're over 8 hours.
Not unless you're
over
43 hours in a week.
In a week. That's an exemption for responders.
So, you know, and you know, there was a big hiccup on that because, like I said, we've been getting it for over 25 years. So, you know.
See, and I think you hit the nail right on the head, and I don't mean to interrupt you, Brian, but I think that we're paying Pigsley, okay? We're meeting, and we've met twice, and you get 4, 5, 6 people, whatever you have coming. Then all of a sudden, when it's coming down to the wire that, hey, this is your final offer, then all of a sudden you get a flock of your people come in, and they're like, no. And I kind of predicted that a little bit.
Right.
That's probably exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's
once you go back over there, then all of a sudden you got a fleet of people are saying, well, we want this, or how about this? So they should have been here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is what they should have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
They should have been.
And I said that the time I read that letter, and I'm like, it's some of the deputies' fault didn't come to the meeting. But I said, I want everybody to understand that even though you say we're at an impasse, we're not, because 3 times sitting down is not enough time to be at an impasse. I mean, that's Pigsley playing the game. Sam Christian, he's a state rep for the FOP. I called him when I heard you guys hired Pigsley, and he says, you need to get an attorney. That's the guidance I got from my FOP. And then he told me exactly what was going to happen. He's going to meet a few times, then he's going to force the county board to pass a resolution enacting their final offer. Exactly what happened.
I guess the confusing thing to me is, you know, the road department did have somebody, a representative, and I was surprised that you didn't have a representative. And then also there's guidelines, I mean, I've been regarding mandatory topics of negotiation and permissible. We negotiated the mandatory items and came to an agreement for the most part on the mandatory items. it was permissible. When you get down into the, you know, the some of the things that aren't salary and benefits, then
the thing is, you guys don't think it's valid points.
I'm not saying it's not valid.
I mean, court pay is, I mean, you're getting up on your day off, going to court, and, you know, we have to do that. We're required by law to do that.
So where was you going with that, Jenny?
I was saying the mandatory topics are usually just, you know, the major topics, which we felt we had agreement on. I mean, we actually have paperwork that says we're fine with that, we're fine with that. But then it got down to kind of more the little things that came in at the end.
Right.
That aren't necessarily mandatory topics. They're permissive topics. So
it
seemed like
we'd
come to an agreement on the mandatory topics that were...
Right, and I understand that, but...
Mm-hmm. So you guys come screaming back in, this is what I'm just speculating that I've read and I've seen, that you want X amount of different things that wasn't even talked about on the final offer.
Correct. I mean, the jail wasn't the same way. I mean, I understand how they do, but we had a firm understanding of what we wanted. And I agree with Brian 100%. I don't think anybody's upset about pay. We're not arguing about that. We want another day off. Instead of giving me that, you took one away. That it cost you guys no money. That, to me, tells me that this board said, we're going to do that because we can. And we paid somebody $32,000 for you guys to take a benefit away from the jail staff. I mean, it makes no sense to me whatsoever, guys. Imagine working for an employer that would sit down and say, hey, these guys have been working hard. They worked through this COVID bull crap. What'd you say, 64% of our staff got COVID?
From working.
From working. And we asked for another day off, and the answer was no. You guys are good. You get too much time off. Imagine working for an employer that said, you know what, the employee means something to me. I want to give them that time off. I want to give them that little bump in pay. I want to let them keep their core pay they've always had. And instead, we didn't do that. We paid someone $32,000 to give us a final offer that now we're standing here arguing about for no reason when we were arguing about core pay and another day off. To me, it sounds ridiculous all the way around. I've been through this with you, what, five times, Scott?
Or so.
And we've sat down and we've argued and we've had fun and we've smiled and, you know, I cracked jokes at your expense and you've done so at mine. But we were always able to come to an agreement. And that's not what happened this time. I mean, this, to me, was the biggest slap in the face you could have gave the sheriff's office. Here's an attorney. We have more money than you do to pay out, and you guys can't afford to fight us in court. That's what it is.
Well, I think, honestly, and I wasn't involved in the negotiation process, but if you look at it from the board standpoint, the Rhodes, sheriff, and jailer's contract, we're talking $2 to $3 million, okay? And for us, in the past, to negotiate the contracts, it was getting up there so high that we need help. We need help as a board. We're not attorneys.
You know, and I don't disagree with that at all. But when Pigsley came in, that first meeting we had, Janet and Troy just said nothing at all. And I'm like,
were you very mad? You were so mad you didn't even want to go to the meeting. You were shaking. You were so mad.
You were right.
You had the wrong idea going to it, and that was bad. You
because
started
I know
wrong.
Jerry. I sent everybody here, Jerry Pigsley, and the research I did on him. You guys had all that.
He was very professional.
Yeah,
was he not professional?
He's good at his job, but you know what his job is? Busting unions. I tried to tell you guys that months back.
Maybe your unions have the wrong idea.
Well, when he sent us the first offer of 0% raise, take our days off, take the benefits.
Longevity,
Yeah, I mean, that should really give us the correct idea, right? Because that's the first offer that we got from you guys.
We're just negotiating.
I mean, is that
that's ridiculous, though. I mean,
it looks funny.
In the 20 years I've been back here, no one's ever done that.
Yeah.
At all. Taking stuff away that we already have, that is just horrible.
Well, but, you know, one thing the labor laws have changed quite a bit is that there aren't as many things as are negotiable as were, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, it is mandatory topics. Otherwise, you could go really deeply into the weeds on everything.
Well, I understand everything. That, but when you
we
set
have
a precedent, that's something. When you've been doing something for over 25 years, there's not a judge out there that said, okay, yeah, I agree with this.
So we've never used it. Attorney at the board?
Probably 2009, probably.
Oh, over 10 years?
Yep.
It was time. I mean, it's time to have somebody that knows the details.
Well,
because there's a lot of change that happened.
Yeah, Jim Hanks was there.
Yeah, that's who I used to work with.
And
do you guys have never had a rep, though? Or
we've never had a rep.
Never?
We've never had to.
We've never had to.
This board's always worked with us. We came to an agreement.
Yeah, we've never had to have a rep.
I guess I didn't realize that, but I guess I'm more accustomed to your list, our list, and we work toward the list rather than things just being thrown in at each.
Well, and I explained to you why that happened.
Yeah, I know. I realize.
And I got out of my control.
Yeah.
But I got to do what the people want me to do.
Right.
Those guys should realize it. I mean, it's them. I mean, you should come, be responsible. You know, you can't complain if you don't take part in the thing.
I agree. But also having an understanding of the process and why what happened, I think that speaks, you know, for itself. I mean, I think honestly, if we sat down one more time, we could hash everything out easy.
Well,
and I would say don't bring Pigsley in, because he's already gave you his, proposals and whatnot. You don't need him anymore. He's just going to continue costing the taxpayers county money. And that's a waste of money. I mean, initially, I can understand why you guys wanted him to come in and look at everything. He's overwhelmed, probably, with everything. But the thing is, once he gave you that first proposal, you should phone take a hike. And I told Joan that several times. Because I knew what he was going to do. Because of his, basically, his professional job, or what is, you know, what he does. You know, he's very good at what he does, and he's busted a lot of counties. So,
but a lot of those things they took out are not really negotiable mandatory items anymore. I mean, it really isn't. We almost gave almost all of them back.
If you look at the Fair Labor Standards Act,
yeah,
court pay is one of those.
I'm talking about, like, you know, the dues and all that stuff. That's not none of that is required.
Well, I understand that. But again,
we gave a lot of that back.
You set a precedent. Mm-hmm. Been doing it for 25 years. See what I'm saying? Set a precedent is almost binding.
And that's, I think, the idea Pigsley gave you guys, because you just said it. We gave a lot of that back. You can't give me something I already have. That's not a benefit to me or anybody, to tell me that I'm benefiting you by giving you something you already got. That's like me taking a toy from my 3-year-old and wrapping it up and giving it to my 7-year-old and here, he's got a brand new toy.
But when labor, you guys are in the business of law enforcement, when laws change, things change. I mean, there's a lot of laws that have changed in 10 years.
We weren't even talking about laws. We were talking about a couple of days off in court pay.
So I guess, just answer me this question. Are we going to be able to reopen the contract if you guys can rescind the resolution? I need to know that, because I need to have a meeting with the union and see if we're going to go to arbitration.
If I had it my way, okay, and I think everybody knows what the answer is around here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but I just, at the end of the day, we all get paid by the same checkbook. We all need to get along. I think there was some mass confusion between you and your people, and I really predicted that, because I know that my prior years of negotiating with you guys,
the same
shit's happened. Yes, no question about it. And I kind of figured that was the case, but needless to say, I know no one's complained about the pay, because we've seen the pay. Joan had it up on the computer, no question about it. You guys are happy about that. I think maybe you guys are a little bit struck by how things went down, and you're a little bit frustrated, and you're angry about that.
Oh, I'm beyond that. Yeah,
I get that. But, you know, me personally, like I said, we all got to work together. I mean, we really do, but I...
So let's do that.
What's that?
So let's do that. Let's sit back down and work together.
Listen, pal, I'm one of five. I'm one of five.
I thought you got 3 votes here, Scott.
Huh?
I thought you got 3 votes.
I did, Aaron.
I said I thought you got 3 votes here.
Vote 3 times.
Oh, I can vote 3. Jeez. I can vote 3 times? I can't hear very well.
Yeah, I realize. Thank you.
So I don't know what the board really wants to do. I mean, I know that we'd like to sit down and talk, but by us saying,
but in your guys' mind, what's the purpose of this meeting to sit down and talk? Like I guess that's where I'm at a loss for. What's the purpose of
that? You won't know unless you go.
That's a horrible answer.
That's true.
I'm asking you. what is the purpose of the talk? What do you guys want to talk to us about? That's what we're asking. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward question.
I think we just feel bad that, you know, that it was the way it went down. Maybe there was a misunderstanding. We thought it was pretty clear, but it obviously wasn't. So maybe just to kind of talk through the process and how to make it better and how to improve the relationships
next time, yeah.
With you and your team, because you're very important and we value everything you do. And
you guys do a good job for the county.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a funny way of showing it by taking benefits away.
Well, this is what I like to see what should happen. Okay, this is me talking here, obviously. I'd like to see us have a sit down, okay, and talk and see where that takes us. Okay, I think that's our best bet right now, guys, is just to see, you know, and to see where the talk will take us to, and will it or will it not reopen things up to be able to negotiate some things. I don't know, I can't answer that, but I would like to see it.
Could be very beneficial to everybody involved.
I think that's the only thing we can do according to what's on the agenda here, because we already have that motion that we approved
I think our only option right now is go back to the union and say, hey, do you guys want this? Because I can't sit here and say yes with jail guys, and Frank can sit here and say yes with Sheriff's Deputy.
I understand.
But let's go back and ask them and see what they want to do, and we'll definitely have an answer for you. But
I think that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm.
So I think at this point, you're not necessarily giving a yes or no to reopen, but you still want to sit down and just talk to see what's
the
kind
process. What went awry in the process?
Yeah, we'll take that back to the union.
I think we've already implemented the wages increases.
You did, to the team. You know, I guess I want to make sure that the board understands that if you do not reopen it, then we'll have to vote to
that
deal.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, mm-hmm.
But
exactly.
Mm-hmm. And that's not a threat. We're not taking that as a threat.
No. Last thing I want to do is go to arbitration.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's only going to line that good lawyer's pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But,
and also, you know, we want a couple representatives from your groups on this health committee, because that's another agenda item, you know.
Right.
Because it's important that they have input.
The guys that are going to be involved in the sit-down? Well, I don't know, I guess.
Well, I mean, it would probably be Todd and me, for sure. And then probably Jacob and Elizabeth or Kim, one of the two or three.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, we can take that back to the body and see, you know, where it goes.
Yeah.
And
I think it's a start.
I don't disagree. I mean, Todd and I went through the list that we actually gave you. Like, there was 10 freaking items on there. And we've actually extended like 4 or 5 of them already. Because they're just not, I mean, we'll take them up at another time. But I guess if we do not open it back up, in the interim, the board has to know that we're only going to work under the resolution for 1 year, and then we need to go back to the table after that year.
And who said that?
Yeah, right. Where did that come from?
Industrial Relations.
Okay.
Commission of Industrial Relations. Because anytime you go to arbitration,
mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
They only do a year at a time.
Gotcha.
So that's why they can't enact a 4-year.
Gotcha.
Would arbitration hurt you guys?
Absolutely would.
It would hurt everybody.
I mean, like I said, it's going to cost us $10,000-$12,000. Could have cost us more than that. But I guarantee you guys are going to be paying 3-4 times that.
Yeah, we don't need to get into a piss and war here.
I don't want to either.
I mean, seriously. I mean, like I said, we get paid by the same checkbook. We just we need to sit down and figure it out. And I think by sitting down and having a conversation and seeing where it takes us, and I think I will clear your people. I think that's the next step.
I agree.
I think that's the next step.
We'll definitely take that back to the body and get a vote on it.
Just tell them to, yeah. And you know what? Over the years, guys, I just got to tell you something. And even when you're talking about certain things, I know that it's a negotiation process. And then all of a sudden, you guys come back to the table and say, how about this, this, and this? But then again, we thought about this, this, and this. Well, that just, I know the mind's thinking, and you got a lot of different bodies that are talking to you, and it opens everything up, and that's where things become complicated. Because like I said, I know I've done it, I did it for like six, eight years, something like that. And when you start throwing more things, you know, on the table, you know, in the kitchen sink shouldn't have left, but it did.
Right.
You know, that's where it gets frustrating for everybody else. You know, it's just like, come on.
Yeah, it's understandable.
You know, and I get it. Like I said, you guys got a lot of voices coming your way, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But I think that I think we're on the right path with it, though. I really do. I think we got to come to a conclusion. And
yeah, I think that's better than doing nothing. I mean, just open some, you know, talk about little things and see what we can do. And if it makes things better, that'd be great.
I don't know if I ever get on a job, I don't want Sarah to take me in the back room and start me around. So, I mean, that thing.
All right, well, I will definitely take that back to the union.
And I don't,
and
please let us know. If I get a 911 call, I want to make sure you're there for me.
I'm there.
I'm teasing you.
Not at night,
so. So you hope that he comes to your help, and you hope you don't see me.
We hope we meet you at this table and nowhere else.
He's more of a helper than what you are, actually.
What?
Isn't he? Is he more of a helper in the community than a...
Yeah, I probably am.
Yeah.
Because he's locked in the jail.
Right on. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank you.
Yep,
thanks for sticking around.
Yep,
it's been a long meeting. Yeah, thanks. It is. I say, I just realized I'm.
It's a record.
It's got to be a record.
Yes, it is. Yeah. All right. So the item. So we'll. I mean, do we need to set a meeting? I mean, right now, or we can do that.
I guess we got to see though for the meeting. We got to see if they. They got to talk to their people.
Oh, they got to talk to their people first. Yeah. Okay. All right. I is also probably will wait till we hear from them.
On I,
mm-hmm.
I would like to, I don't know if you've ever done this or not, but even some of the other departments of the courthouse, have them get on the committee.
Yep.
Because they all have stakeholders.
They all have a stakeholders.
So.
Good point. I think we did have some other people on the committee, didn't we? We had it last time. Maybe. Don? I can't remember. But yeah, that's a good idea. So representatives from the unions as well as the courthouse.
Yep.
Perfect. All right, board to approve or not approve flu shots at no cost for county employees.
We've done it for many years,
yeah.
To my recollection. I think it's a great idea.
Great idea.
Yeah.
Yep. I make a motion to approve that one.
A second.
Okay. Wow. You already approved it. United Pathways is giving them 150 free shots.
So, oh wow.
She thought she would just pass those on.
Okay.
So
nice.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay.
So motion
free.
Second.
So Troy, Janet.
Yep.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Robert.
Yes.
All right. Kay, UNL. Discussion regarding the Extension Office lease agreement, option to renew with the Papio NRD here in Dakota City.
I brought this up to Joan here last time I did claims, and I seen it was still 600, and I know that the date was outdated, so we're still paying the 600, but it ended on June of 2020.
Is that just a year contract?
No.
I think it was a 3-year.
It was a 3-year, yeah. It was
17th.
So
we need a new contract?
Yeah, this expired last year.
Yeah, last year, 2020, so.
Oh, you had an option to renew for an additional 3 years.
Yeah.
Because what's in there?
So now it's to 23?
They love us. We love them. It's a beautiful building.
Yep.
We tried it one time to bring them over here. And it was just everything that they have going on with kitchens and et cetera.
We got a kitchen over there?
Yeah, I think they do a lot of cooking things.
Oh, probably with the extension,
I bet.
They
do a lot more than what people think they do.
Cooking with 4-H and stuff, I bet.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So it expired June of 2020, and you have an option to renew. So do they need to do a new contract? Or because they just exercise the option? Renew without having to do a new contract.
Let's just get an extension with the extension.
Yeah, there's so long ago.
I know. Number two on the front page
is the
term
for 3 years, and then number 19 on the back is the option to renew, but the term ended June 30th of 2020.
So this will go through.
So we're in year one of the renewal.
Of extension.
Yeah, 2023, so we got 2 years.
So notice of intention to extend shall be delivered to the, oh, so we should have notified them. We should have notified them. And we didn't. Should we notify them now?
We mailed it. Must not have got there.
Mail service is a little extra slow lately.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion to approve the extension.
Okay, Bob.
To 2023.
I'll second.
Yes, we'll tell them if they want it.
Okay. So basically, we would just send them a letter saying we've made them, and then hopefully they'll say, sure, sign off on it with the new contract.
They don't like it, they'll tell us.
Yeah. All right. Vote on that one.
Okay, Troy.
Vote. Yes, sorry.
Janet?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
All right. Commissioner committee reports, mail and emergency business committee reports.
I did sit down and interview for the roads department today. So.
Oh, good. Had some candidates then.
Yeah, have some candidates.
Good.
What's that position for again?
Blake.
White operator.
That's good. Nice to have candidates.
Okay.
Any mail and emergency business? All right. And we, maintenance of Veterans Drive was there. I didn't realize it was there.
It's already discussed.
Okay. Adjournment. Done.
I moved the LEC. Remember, I told you I was going to want to promote it. Cold night, windy. I thought I got to get it done. Wet. 2 hours out. This is huge. Can I keep that body?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice one.
Huh?
Yeah, nice one.
So I had a call. BOE or no? BOE.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, nice to get up here.
Call. On my list.
Yeah, let's do it first.
This will be, I bet you we can have this in 4 minutes.
Yeah. Is that in the paper? It's supposed to start at 3:30.
Or after. Well, sooner than 3:30. But then again, I like the way Larry thinks. 3:30 we should have been done.
Call the meeting order. We already did the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call.
Troy Lonsby. Janet Gill.
Yes.
Scott Love.
Yes.
Robert Gacy.
Here.
Larry Abinicius.
Yeah.
Current copy of the Open Meetings Act is posted at the West Wall near the entrance to the County Board meeting room and is available for review by all citizens in attendance. Dakota County Board of Equalization reserves the right to adjust the order of the items agenda if necessary. One is the consent agenda and A is approval of previous minutes from September 7th to 2021.
So moved.
Second.
I'll second.
Janet.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
Robert.
Yes.
Larry.
Yes.
Troy.
Yes. We're going to move on to two. New business. A is levy the necessary taxes for current year and certify all levies. 77-1601.
That's the assist sheet.
Yep.
I'll make a motion to approve that. I was pleased to see that a lot of them had gone down.
Second.
Scott?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes. A few of them are missing. I'm assuming we're still going to get those.
No. Okay. In the blue is set by another county.
Oh, okay. That's why.
Not set by levy other than Dakota. It's a little blue.
Okay, got
so
it.
But I will get you one of these after I get them all certified from you. Now I send this out to all the other counties and they send me theirs.
I'm getting a master. Yeah. Got it.
Okay. Move on to B then. Hearing for Heartland Counseling Service Incorporated application for exemption from motor vehicle taxes by qualifying nonprofit organization for 2015 shipping PALA VIN 2G1WB 34F114-6102 HCS vehicle are used to provide community support services, crisis response, peer support services, clients who have mental health and or substance abuse issues. Application comes with recommendation approval by Don Bosquet, Treasurer, 60-3185, 60-3189. Board to consider the recommendation of the county treasurer and any other information it may obtain and shall approve and deny exemption on the basis of law and the rules and regulations adopted, promulgated by the tax of commissioner 77-2021.
Move to approve.
Is that this with all these cars on the back?
Yes.
Okay.
telling them we're doing just the car that's in September.
Okay.
They can't.
Okay, just the Chevy Impala.
Yep, so Robert Casey.
Up second. Did we already motion second?
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet? Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
C, Chris the Apps Assessor requesting approval for tax list correction 7716-1302.
So the school purchased a property at 210 West 39th back in 2017. Jeff had it exempt for a couple years, and I think it was we looked at that maybe they were possibly renting it out because they were having permits on it with decks and whatnot. Well, come to find out, it's called the Cardinal House, and they do teach kids how to cook, some of the slower kids and stuff. So we've been charging them for it. There was never a sign in front of it. Now all of a sudden there's a sign in front of it. The school contacted me. We said, fine, it probably should be exempt.
That's on 39th Street?
Yeah, it's next to the old pool. It's a, I think it's like a modular house. It was somebody's house at one time and they purchased it.
The old pool on 39th?
Or not 39th, 33rd or whatever street that is.
Oh, yeah. Well, the house right beside it.
Yeah, sorry.
The house right beside it right there.
Yeah, sorry, not 39.
Yeah. So we were charging a tax, and all of a sudden they put a sign up, and they're helping.
Well, yeah, and they never told us that's what they were doing with it. So we assumed they were renting it out until they could figure it out. Well, because they had permits for decks and whatnot. We thought, well, they're renting it out. They never said anything different. Now all of a sudden there's a sign in front of it that says Cardinal House.
So I think they were renting it at one time.
According to them, they never did.
Yeah, whatever.
That's kind of what we thought.
So this is this year.
This is for 19 and
20. It's owned by the school.
Okay.
Yeah. So the correction's for 19 and 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when that all went down. Okay, so I'll can I make a tax approval corrections with, of course, with Christie's recommendation with the school of South Sioux City, 33rd Cooking House. That's my motion.
I'll second that cooking. That what kind of cooking they're doing? I hope it's good cooking, not mess, not anything inappropriate.
They have to cook and food. Right?
Cooking food, learning, teaching kids how to cook and probably
Larry,
keep
Larry,
yes.
Troy,
yes.
Janet,
yes.
Scott,
yes.
Robert,
yes.
Probably teaching kids some good housekeeping skills.
I guess they used to rent an apartment for them.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, this is.
And they bought this to take over for their apartment.
Well, it's right next to the school, too, so probably convenient. That makes sense.
Okay, three is mail and or emergency business. Do we have any?
No.
None. Okay, let's go to four. Is there any public comment?
No.
No public comment.
No public comment.
Okay, five, adjournment.
All right.
I am going to the legislative day next week that John talked about. Anybody got any laws they want to change in the legislature?
I don't know. Lucky I had 1,000.